North-South Connection Podcast Network. How the hell are you? If you're hearing my voice, this is Aaron. You know me from a few shows on this network. But tonight, I'm speaking with a guy, a dude that I've been talking to for a while now. And we've been throwing around an idea, and it's a new thing we're going to try out tonight. Hope you guys like it. And I think you will. I have a really good feeling. Let me bring in my man, Johnny C. Johnny, how the hell are you?
Aaron, my man, it is fantastic to finally meet you digitally, face-to-face.
Yes.
Via the magic of the internet.
Black square to black square.
Oh, it's amazing what we've been able to do with modern technology. Yes, I really appreciate the opportunity. Big fan of the North-South network. It just, you know, I'm excited. I'm ready to go. I think that we have a very unique perspective to offer the listeners out there.
Well, I hope so. So we are, as you know, there's a show on the network called TNA Never Dies. And what
right.
I love what you said to me off air. So could you reiterate that about how TNA never dies, but...
Well, sure, TNA never dies, but we all know that WCW must die. And so we are here to present for the listeners sort of a chronicling, if you will, of probably the most tumultuous time in WCW's history. I know that's probably up for debate considering we are talking about WCW, but specifically the Russo-Bischoff era. That's right, guys. We are talking about the reboot, 4-10-0-0.
That's right.
Monday Nitro, the reboot.
Yeah, so you said go ahead and watch this, and I did. Went by a lot faster than I thought it would. But before we do, Johnny, tell everybody about yourself. Where are you from? What's your background with wrestling, with WCW? Just in terms of your fandom, where are you coming at this from?
Sure. So I am... let's see here. Like a lot of us, or, you know, I guess you and I, you know, I'm in my late 30s. I'm from the Midwest in the States. I grew up watching wrestling. My first pay-per-view was recently chronicled on the year that was, which is what, every other Monday on the North-South Connection podcast?
It is, in tandem with now entering the Royal Rumble, JT and I going through every single Royal Rumble entrance, starting with Bret Hart, ending with whoever finally dies in the ring at the Royal Rumble.
Yes. God, you never know. But yeah, started with Survivor Series 89. It was like my brother's birthday and he bought it, like, for some reason we had it, which blows my mind because back in the day you had to go and physically get the cable box, at least where I grew up in Ohio. So if there's anybody from Ohio, you know the pain that we experience. So, but yeah, it just, and I just fell in love with it, man. You know, WrestleMania 6 was my first WrestleMania. I love that JT's obsessed with it. I love that Robert Goulet sings the Canadian national anthem in the beginning, and that's how I learned it. I love the lady in the front row that goes, "True patriot love." Like, she's got a large mouth, and it just, it's always caught my attention. I'm sorry if you're that person or if that's your grandma or anything like that. But yeah, so... I grew up, you know, I attended WrestleMania 8 as a youngster.
Oh, so jealous.
I'm still looking for the centerfold. You know, I was promised a centerfold of Liz, and, you know, I know that it's a different world now, but you still haven't delivered on your promise, WWF/E.
Does it bother you that there are staple marks in the centerfold, though?
I think at that age, I wouldn't have known what to do. Anyway, so I'm going to go with no. You know, so yeah. So I grew up Attitude Era, always a Northern guy, ironically enough. And when Northern, I'm, of course, talking about the territories, always a Vince New York guy. I was aware of WCW. Of course, you know, I flipped back and forth based on what was happening on the screen at the time. You know, if we're getting hardcore Holly versus the Portuguese Man of War, which... I did not know was an actual thing. I thought he was a soldier for hire from Portugal.
No. Apparently it's some sort of fish, right? Or is it a jellyfish?
Right.
It's a jellyfish, right?
Yeah, it's like an evil jellyfish or something like that.
Why would they dress him? Like, why do they dress him the way they did then?
I don't get it to this day. Like, I'm not saying that investing money in Just Incredible was a good idea to begin with, but come on. I mean, I don't know. But yeah, so a group with the Attitude Era, you know, the NWO, I had the shirt. I mean, wrestling was cool when I was in high school. It was amazing. I walk around saying, suck it. You know, I wouldn't recommend doing that. But at the same time, you know, just it hit the right spot. You know, when I was a kid and I needed superheroes and cartoons, that's what Vince was selling me. When I was a teenager and I, quote unquote, needed aggression and angst, rebellion and mature themes, Vince sold it to me. So, you know.
And when you were in your late 20s and you needed that childish product again, there was Vince with open arms.
Yeah, so I held on as a regular watcher until about the SmackDown 6 era. That was when I kind of moved into my first apartment. And I remember specifically, I was just thinking about this the other night. We always went out to the bar on Thursday night, and I was trying to watch the Iron Man match. And also just getting like feverishly drunk with my friends, you know, trying to get to that bar, but being like, no, hold on. Even though it was taped, you know, I still had to see it.
Right.
And then it just kind of, you know, I would watch pay-per-views. I would find ways, you know, I followed online and everything like that. But I just, you know, I can't handle this shit that they're giving out now. So how it circles back to WCW is, like I said, I was a Northern guy. I'm fascinated by this period of WCW. I guess you could say I'm fascinated with the period that starts with the logo change. But specifically, I love the Attitude Era. I think a lot of people enjoyed the fact that sort of everybody on the – I know it's an old hand at this point, but like everybody on the roster had something to do. I've always been kind of a weird wrestling fan where I have always enjoyed the sizzle – more than the in-ring. And I'm probably going to lose all my internet credibility by saying that, but you know, 3-minute matches with limited work rate, but at the same time I get like funny skits and soap opera and cool theme songs. Like that's kind of what I wanted. So the fact that there was this whole other thing about to happen in WCW and they were going to finally give that presentation, I was interested. And I've sort of in my, you know, years of thanks to the network and Peacock and what have you, like I've just become obsessed with this period from the logo change until the death.
Yeah. I don't think you're alone in that. I mean, I'll join you on that island. Like with a wrestling television show, I want things to move, right? Like I'm okay with short matches and skits and stupidity. I don't mind if a good match is kind of woven every now and then, but as long as the stories are interesting, I'm on board. Like that's the big thing with like 98, 99 WWF is that, especially 99, like there is no, there's very little great matches in 1999 on pay-per-view or in TV, but the show's great because the show moves and every, like you said, everybody's got something to do and you're right. You got cool music and stuff happening and old women getting beaten up and Mark Henry banging two or three people. Like it was all, there was always something going on. And I think for a wrestling show, on television, I have no issue with that at all.
Right. And, you know, it's kind of funny because that stuff may or may not hold up in a, you know, it may in a, like a very tight vacuum. But, you know, nobody is sitting here reminiscing about like WrestleMania 15, but we could wax nostalgic forever on like 8. And the reason is because, you know, when stuff had time to breathe, it made more of an impact, you know. The weekly Crash TV Russo approach, which we'll get into very soon, like it's awesome in the moment, but long term, you look back and you're like, oh man, what a disaster.
Yeah, and where I think it's actually a disaster is where they try to take the format they're doing on TV and then put that on a pay-per-view. That's where I think it really suffers. Like, not to get ahead of ourselves, but after I watch the show, I watch the pay-per-view that's coming.
Bless your heart.
I've tried. I keep falling asleep, but it's like, oh my God, like that's when I really suffer. That's actually the biggest problem I have with TNA. When I watch TNA for TNA Never Dies every other Tuesday on the South Connection Podcast Network with the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast by Jacob Williams. But every time I watch TNA, it's like, this is the main show. So it's like nothing ever pays off properly in terms of the athleticism of it, you know?
Yes. And I won't lie, there's a nice little tie in here. I'm kind of a big comics nerd, and we'll get into the storyline that they drum up with here at this reboot. Kind of a little DC versus Marvel feel to it. So I don't know. I'm into that. It's executed poorly, and there's wrong choices made. It's like, nobody bought DC versus Marvel to see Superman fight the Hulk because, oh. I mean, nobody cares. But since neither company wanted to really lose, which I know it's not like it's an invasion angle, but we'll get into it. It's just they're pairings.
That DC versus Marvel is a fucking mess.
Oh, I know. Like, I do. Robin versus Jubilee. That's the 90s, guys. You want to know what the 90s were? Jubilee versus Robin.
And or conversely, Wolverine versus Lobo.
Oh, what a bazitch that Lobo is.
Yeah. Before we get into Nitro 4-10-2000 proper, Johnny, why don't you give us a little bit of like what's going on in WCW at this point? Because for me, I remember because I was all in on WWF, like because we never got WCW up north for a very long time. And so when we've heard they were getting their asses kicked, it was like, but why? Like, we didn't get it, right? And so when we heard that – I remember when I heard Vince Russo was leaving, like when I saw it on the internet, for a second I got worried. I was like, oh, no, are they going to turn the tide back? So what's the state of WCW going into this reboot on April 10th, 2000?
All right. So big picture-wise, going back to like October of 99, when you had mentioned Russo switching, I don't have all the details on this per se in terms of what I dug into. But he does show up. We go through what's known as the powers that be era. It's not really super important to what we're going to be covering tonight.
Is that when he's off camera and you just see his hands?
That's Dr. Claw, the Dr. Claw version of Vince Russo. Yes. He's got the Harris boys or creative control. Henning's running around looking like he's, hurting. So Vince Russo shows up as the powers that be character, and very famously dubs Jeff Jarrett the Chosen One, et cetera, et cetera. Goes home. I'm not going to get into the politics of that. I don't really know all of it. They have a booking committee, and it doesn't go well. Ferrara's there, but starting with Uncensored 2000, which is the March pay-per-view. All right. Let me give you all just a little peek into what was happening in WCW. So the NWO was a thing made up of Jeff Jarrett and the Harris brothers. Let that sink in for a minute.
Yeah.
Sid was the world champion and was allies with a red and yellow strange hybrid version of Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
See, I never want to see Sid ever friends with Hulk Hogan.
You hold on, you'll get your wish. But I will tell you what, I do recommend Uncensored 2000 for anyone out there who likes a good laugh. It starts with Sid letting Jeff Jarrett know via the video package that he'll kick his ass at Uncensored 2000, just in case Jarrett, didn't want to wait a year to get his ass kicked. It's glorious. And the fact that they chose it for the video package. He also wears a very tiny hat in the opening video. It's great. Team package was a thing. That's Lex Luger and Ric Flair because he's the total package and Ric Flair has one.
So not a good package. Not a well thought out name.
No, I mean, you can't really put that on a bumper sticker.
No,
I mean, you could. People in Ohio would buy it, but nowhere else. So they're feuding with Sting, who is still the Brandon Lee Crow Sting. Thank God he's not red anymore. Vampiro is getting a big push. Keep that in mind. Also is the Wall. They're pushing the Wall as like a monster who's putting people through tables. So to wrap up Uncensored, Hogan helps Sid beat Flair. They're sort of allies. Hogan helps Sid beat Jarrett. They're allies. Steiner returns, Scott Steiner, and he's massively over and joins the NWO. And
the one credible person in the NWO. This point.
Yes, and we'll get into that, but man, they love them some Scott Steiner in the WCW world. And that's where famously Hogan pins Flair in the strap match.
What a fucking stupid
That's right. Hogan pins Flair in the strap match.
Yeah.
And, oh, I also wanted to make note, it's Tony Schiavone, Mark Madden on commentary, and Madden is doing his best Heenan/Jesse Ventura impression of cheering for all the heels regardless.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring that up specifically is because when the alignments change, he does too, and it doesn't really work from a character perspective. So after that, we've got one Nitro where, real quick, Steiner's super over. Sid turns on Hogan. You get your wish.
Good.
And Sting and Vampiro form the Brothers in Paint.
Fuck off.
Check your pulse, America, in the rest of the world. Sorry, I'm not a nationalist. The Brothers in Paint, again, is what they're called. Then, actually, not a bad watch the week after that, the Spring Breakout episode. DDP comes back from forming Ready to Rumble. Sid puts a bounty on Hogan. You get that famous moment where Hogan sees the wall like 6 miles away and he's like, "That's the wall, brother."
So we should just explain, if no one was watching, the wall is a human.
He's a man that's full of malice.
He's full of malice. But just before, when you were saying they're pushing the wall, like, that must sound so strange to somebody who doesn't know that's a character on the show.
Well, I mean, we might be exercising. You got to stretch, right? Pushing against the wall. But yeah, the wall is he was Berlin's bodyguard. I don't know the gentleman's real name. He's a big guy. He wears a ripped button-down shirt and a tie, sunglasses. I don't know. Like, Aaron, explain the wall better.
Well, his real name is Jerry Tweet. So.
Oh, God, of course it is. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm sure he was a kind man. I mean no disrespect.
Is he dead?
Oh, my God. He's very dead.
He died in 2003, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
look, he was
him
just
and Kurt Hennig are reminiscing about Brock Lesnar together.
I tell you, Wall, I pushed him. He's just a guy in a suit. Like, he was this, there was this weird, like, Berlin was like a weird German nationalist, right?
Yes.
Like an evil.
Yeah, Alex Wright.
Yeah, evil Alex Wright with a shaved head. And then Jim Duggan messed up his first match and he was never the same. And so they brought in this guy to be his heavy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. And, you know, he's been beating up guys like Crowbar and David Flair. That's right. Charlotte's little, or big brother, David.
So no one of consequence.
No, not really. Bam Bam Bigelow, Brian Knobs. No, he doesn't beat up Brian Knobs. Brian Knobs gives this impassioned interview to Uncensored. He's like, "Bam Bam, Crowbar, we're praying for you." That's a shitty Brian Knobs, but yeah. So the Spring Breakout episode is super important, though, because, guys, this is where we get the first inkling of the reboot. And I shit you not, this is how it happens. During the commentary of some random match, Tony Schiavone says, "Fans, I've received word that Eric Bischoff has been rehired by WCW. And get this, they've also extended an offer to Vince Russo to come in and work creative with Eric Bischoff for this program. And by the end of the Spring Break Nitro, we're going to have an answer for you whether or not they will agree to work together." And you got Madden being like, "Oh, my God, they'll never work together. I can't believe this." But I specifically want to focus on Schiavone saying that they're going to be brought in to run creative. This is, if you're making a list at home, guys, this is number one problem.
Yeah, I don't want to hear the word creative in a wrestling show.
Yeah, find a way to make it make sense in the storyline. Nobody writes, a movie and it's like, "Superman, this is the part where you fly." Because the script says so. No.
Imagine, like, Gimli turns to, like, Legolas and Leg of the Rings, like, "Well, you know, they brought in a creative writer to tell me." Like, it makes no goddamn sense. Like, it's one thing to hear it, like, as part of The Observer, but to have it on the actual, quote-unquote, fictional show that they're presenting, like, it makes no goddamn sense.
I mean, you know, WCW, I mean, I'm not trying to reboot. This show is not about rebooking it, but here we go. I'm going to wear that hat. To head the championship committee. There you go. Problem solved.
Yeah, right? Sure.
They love that damn championship committee.
Yeah.
So
if you don't even want to do that, just call them executives.
Sure. I mean, GMs. I mean, I know that that's, you know, with 2020 vision.
Right.
But, you know, and they're constantly saying that, you know, Russo, he was here. He left. They want to bring him in for the head of creative. They say the words W. They say the letters WWF about 1,000 times. But yeah, can they work together is a big thing. Oh, and the show ends with Hogan and Vampiro becoming stable, basically. That's right. That's right.
What a drop down. Hogan's teammates are just a drop down like forever. So it's like it's Savage, which is great. Beefcake, bump up with Warrior, and then we're ending here with, because this I guess is his last ever
Edge.
I guess Edge later. I guess it's a bit of a bump up, but freaking Vampiro's got to be the nadir of his
of his team for sure. And they're really pushing Vampiro hard, like Vampiro's catching Hogan in the back, being like, "Hey, brother, I just wanted to tell you because, it's the right thing to do that Sid's got $500,000 looking to take you down, brother." And they're really, really positioning Vampiro hard. The reason I want to reiterate this to the audience is because there's going to be such a shift and I don't necessarily think shifting is a bad thing, but man, it just makes no sense.
Why does Sid need a bounty? He's like a professional murderer, basically.
I guess because he didn't want to work the Spring Breakout episode because he is not there.
Bounty as opposed to not wanting to hurt yourself bounty?
I mean, maybe he had a game. That's such the lowest hanging fruit when it comes to Sid jokes. I do think that I really recommend the Spring Breakout episode, though, because there are so many cutaway montages to what they were up to in Florida that week. And so many bad sponsorships. You got the Nitro girls being it's call ATT or the wireless set. I can't even remember what product it was. It's such a time capsule of 2099. You will not be disappointed if you grew up in that time period.
Yeah. Yeah. So that brings us, does that bring us to this show?
Oh, one more. After that, there's a clip show. All right. Literally. They say at Spring Breakout, they say they're going to take a break. They're going to come back in 2 weeks. They say next week we're going to run a Best of Nitro. So this is actually kind of interesting. It's Tony Schiavone and Mark Madden and his Lisp in an empty arena. And they basically just talk about the history of WCW on TNT. It's kind of like WCW began with the Mall of America 95 episode. They pivot then to the NWO. They talk about Bischoff as if he's like a real person and a character at the same time. It's so strange. They talk about the Cruiserweight division. They have montages of Benoit, Guerrero, Malenko, Jericho, all these guys who are gone. It's like a weird, it almost plays like a DVD of the death of WCW in a way.
Weird.
And they're focusing so heavily on these guys who are with Vince at this point. They're openly admitting that they suck, saying things like, we want to get brought back to glory. We want to get back on top. And again, they want to leave us with the big question. Can they work together in creative? Can they work together?
In creative.
That's the hook. Right. But that's the hook. They're promising they're going to start fresh. So if you are interested in being a new viewer, that's pretty much all you have to go by. New creative, which again, and can they work together?
And that brings us to the 4/10/2000 WCW Nitro, the big reboot. Right away, the music is so freaking. So did you watch this on the network or on Peacock?
I did watch it on Peacock, yes.
So I have I guess it was on YouTube, a rip right from the when it was shown originally. And that's what I watched it on. So it's going to be interesting to see what music is edited and what isn't on this thing.
Oh, I have, it's so funny to say, I have so many notes about the music edits.
Well, there's a lot of weird shit with the music. But the opening music of this show is so generic. It's live from Denver, Colorado. It's just explosions and that dance music. So it feels like TNA right off the bat. And Tony Schiavone screaming, "A new chapter, a new day, a new era." There's got to be more words to describe this, right?
Yeah, but you know what, though? I'm into it. This is what I'm here for. And right off the bat, Schiavone is letting me feel like I'm going to get it now. That's also Continue.
Now, but strange that he's yelling about this new day, new chapter, new era, and the very first guy they show on camera is Chris Candido, which I think is a poor choice if you're trying to reboot the company.
Oh, man.
And I like Candido.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, everybody likes a good cut. It's all fine.
Yeah. Off of that intro, I need to see someone more important. And then.
Sure.
Like, you know.
Brian Knobs, maybe?
Yeah, well, he's right beside him. So here we go. Vince Russo has called everyone for a meeting in the ring. I don't understand why we have to do this meeting in the ring.
I don't understand why this looks like a junior high, like awards banquet. These wrestlers all look like they were dressed by their mothers. And I don't know who the hell 75% of them are. And I'm a diehard wrestling fan. I'm telling you that right now, Aaron. I didn't recognize these guys. Who are they?
There's no consistency in their attire either. Is it formal? Is it casual? Is it business casual? It's just all over the place.
Kidman and Tori are going to prom. Booker's trying to look. I mean, Booker's wearing a suit, which I guess The Rock was more like the crazy shirts. But, you know, he's well dressed. You know, and Jarrett's got like an orange button down with no
sleeves.
Stupid
orange cutoff shirt. Like we've chronicled this on TNA. Like whenever Jeff Jarrett tries to look cool, it just does not work.
Yeah. So, I mean, I always, for strange reason, dug Jarrett's glasses, his like hunting glasses. Now, I'm not a hunter and whatever, but I don't know. I kind of thought it was cool.
Is that what they are? Because I always assumed they were reading glasses.
I think they're like hunting glasses because I've, in my teenage years, been close to buying a pair. Places like Walmart in the hunting section, maybe.
Even though you're not a hunter. You're just like, I'm going to wear these glasses.
I'm kind of a year 2000 Jarrett Mark.
Oh.
Not like I just like to say slap nuts. I mean, shit, you know, stuff like that.
On his recent podcast about Bash at the Beach 2000, they talk about the origin of the word slap nuts.
Wow. I can't wait to give that a listen. And I'm also in the marketplace to refinance, so it's going to be a great double whammy. he's great with Okerlund. Like, Mean Gene 2000 is great. If you've ever seen Ready to Rumble, when he's like drunk and talking to Oliver Platt, and he's like, do people think I'm sexy? He's like, I think you're sexy, Mean Gene. I do. Like, that's the character that Mean Gene plays in the dying days of WCW. And I always thought him and Jarrett were funny together.
Yeah, there's always something sad about Mean Gene in WCW. Like, he's just trying to get home, you know? Weird to see Steiner and The Wall walk out together, too. Like, it's very much like, is this just a white supremacist faction that they're forming together?
Man, and I think Booker and Kat come out together later. Well, that's at the end. Never mind.
Well, because everybody's in the ring, and then all the main eventers come out, which I guess is fine. And then Scott Hudson. So I got no qualms with Scott Hudson, but he's got a serious case of Mike Tenay-itis on this show, where he feels he needs to narrate everything. So it's like
he wants to be a soundbite so bad.
Yeah. All we know is that Vince Russo was called a meeting. Like, you just told us he called a meeting. Look, we don't need to reiterate this.
Yeah.
And then Jarrett gets on the mic, and he starts talking. 6 months ago, I told everyone I was the chosen one. I was handpicked to be the next WCW champion. And then he credits Russo for turning the WWF around. He was there. But then he's like, the good old boys blocked it.
The good old boys network.
Yeah, yes. And then he's like, they weren't in my league. Who is he talking about?
So the Good Old Boys Network, I believe, is a reference to literally the booking committee, like Kevin Sullivan and Ferrara and Terry Taylor, like the people who were legitimately in charge during those awful shows that we kind of talked about in the beginning. I think J.J. – I know Dylan was like up in WWF, I think, but I think – because they talk shit about J.J. Dylan later. I think that's the Good Old Boy Network. And not for nothing, Booker agrees. He's shaking his head the whole time like, that's right, that's right, that's right.
Right.
Keep also cutting to this woman in the crowd that looks like Lady J from the G.I. Joe movie.
Is she wearing the green from the movie or from the TV show?
The movie. The actress who was fated to play Wonder Woman. But the reason I bring it up is because if you watch the show, they cut to her no doubt like six times.
Weird.
She's either somebody's niece or the cameraman was lonely. I don't know.
Is she very attractive?
I mean, if that's your thing, I mean, I think that the actress that plays Lady J is attractive, and she's, you know, I'm sure a wonderful person, which is much more important. But I don't know. This lady's very 2000.
Are you at all worried about when you're talking about how Lady J is attractive? Are you at all worried about earning Flint's ire?
No one wants to be on the wrong side of a free runner like Flint. I also don't want to be on the bad side of Roadblock.
No.
And Lady J is like a sister to him.
That's right.
I would, however, like to be on the wrong side of Duke.
Duke would beat the shit out of you. I'm sorry.
Here's the thing, buddy. Duke's dead. I saw that snake go right into his heart.
Excuse me. I heard it from a very reputable doctor that he was only in a coma. So doctors don't lie. And now
Anyway,
Jarrett is.
This is how good WCW is, by the way.
Yeah, we're talking about G.I. Joe. Jarrett works in Slapnuts a bunch, and then he goes, "It's an honor to introduce Vince McMahon's best kept secret, who once again will change the game." And it brings out Russo, and he comes out now on the network. Is it Iron Man by Black Sabbath?
No, and it's very much something that I missed, because I remember him coming out to the Iron Man knockoff, and you know, he's not Iron Man, he's the Batman, which we'll get into in a minute later. But I always dug that. For some reason, you know, little old, I guess 16, 17 year old me dug Russo's theme music.
Well, and like Scott Hudson is going on about, like, he said he would never appear on camera. Like, has Hudson never watched a wrestling program? Like, no one ever does what they say or like keeps to any sort of promise.
That's the thing. It's so weird because Scott Hudson knows that Vince Russo's in charge of creative, and that was a creative decision that he made. There's no rules here, Aaron. What are the rules?
What are the rules? What are the rules?
You know, Jarrett also flubs his line completely. I guess it's maybe if you've listened to his podcast, you've heard him flub over himself 100 times. But he's supposed to say the power is Vince Russo, and he. Matter of fact, he gets back to it somehow, but it's executed poorly. Russo comes to the ring. Yeah, he's got the Iron Man knockoff. What are you going to do?
Yeah, Madden's like he's not in charge by himself. Where's Eric Bischoff? So they're already setting them up as adversaries.
Yes.
Setting them up, which I guess they did in the previous episode. Are they going to be able to work together? And
yeah.
Russo comes out and he's talking about how he gave 6 years of his life to WWF, and he came here with one thing on his mind: to beat Vince McMahon at his own game. The good old boy network kicked in, and here we are. And at this point, they show Ming in street clothes, which I feel is completely wrong.
Yeah, it's really a sight to behold. It almost destroys his incredibility 100% completely.
I would have been more comfortable with him if he was just naked.
I think he might have been too, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know Ming personally, but it's such a weird place to put these people. You got Lash LaRue on the ground, like walking back and forth into camera when he's not supposed to be. There's so many jabronis out here. I don't know who half of them are. I think El Dandy's there, maybe.
Well,
are
you doubting that he's there? Because I don't know who you are to do that.
I don't even know. I know that Major Gunn or Tylene Buck, I think her name is, like, she was one of Steiner's girls, is like very clearly visible. Candido is back there, but it's like, how did they choose the people to put in front of the camera? Like, Knobs is prominent.
Well,
Knobs
is like nodding in agreement with Vince Russo. Like, he didn't make his whole fucking fortune working for Vince McMahon.
Yeah, spoiler alert, folks, Knobs doesn't appear again.
Good.
Unless it's on, like, Thunder or some shit that I haven't watched. Because, yeah, blame the cock. I don't have Thunder access.
Before we go further, what would scare you more? Ming attacking you in street clothes or Ming attacking you naked?
I guess the street clothes, because if he's naked, I'm thinking it might be a dream. You know, like, oh, okay, I'm going to wake up any second. And then I'm very, much wondering how I know how intricately what Ming's penis looks like.
See, I'm because I'm more worried that the beating is only the beginning of my night with Ming if he's coming at me naked.
Oh, that's the berserker. Yeah, I mean that's the thing too. I mean, you know, I've always been and said kind things about Bobby the Brain Heenan, so maybe that'll help us in the end. Perhaps. You know,
we're
in
Bobby's
the end,
friends.
You know, Tully was innocent. I swear. We know.
So Nobbs is nodding. Russo's going off. Nobbs is agreeing as though he's going to have a job. Russo.
Wait,
laments,
Aaron. Are you done yet?
Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah. From backstage, because, no less.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's a little gimmick there that I did. But yeah, continue.
No, but that's just it. Are you done yet? So here we go. We're going to get the confrontation between Bischoff and Russo. And he comes out. His hair is pretty top notch here. The long gray, I'm on board.
Hey, Bischoff is looking good here. This is actually when he's got this kind of swagger here is what gave me the idea that I eventually came up with for how they could have – well, not – just an idea for how to fix this. But, yeah, Bischoff's looking good, man. He's not deflated by the business yet. He'd get there pretty quick if you keep watching. But, yeah, so he comes down. He confronts Russo. Are you done yet? What's going to happen?
And Scott Hudson is like, this is the most surreal thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's like.
Like we didn't have Stone Cold Steve Austin and Vince McMahon fighting for like a year before this.
Right. Or, I mean, gosh, this is, let's see, 2000, you know, WrestleMania's happened. So there's been some crazy stuff going on. I mean, we had Austin get hit by a car. Well, I guess. Even though they are in the, you know, talking about WWF is very much in vogue in this WCW, which is very much for the smart marks. That's something else we should probably put out there.
Yeah, I love it's funny because now, like, AEW today mentions WWF a lot. And, like, people, well, not a lot, but every now and then. And people seem to get really riled up by that.
It's a different era now. It makes a hell of a lot more sense to you. The world is not as small as it was. Like, I mean, obviously, I'm not going to propose a theory that there's a larger planet than there once was. I'm not a scientist. But based on the internet and how, you know, much information we can obtain, we all know the, you know, the game of wrestling. It's silly to not to sit there and pretend like you're the only one that's on TV.
Yeah, let's
now,
act like it's just
how
us.
Far you take it.
Yeah, that's a different story.
Well, because that. Yeah, that whole illusion died a long time ago. So I don't, you know, I get it, especially when you bring in like Andrade or Tyler Black. I just lost it. I lost all my internet credibility. I'm sorry, guys. The modern product sucks.
His name is Tyler Durden, Black is obviously.
obviously. Well, you know, side question, Aaron. Do you think that was Ming's penis in Fight Club?
Yeah, obviously it was. That's the one that's cut into the film,
I mean,
right?
Yeah. Tyler Durden had access to, you know, Tyler Durden, spoiler, was a dream. Hmm. Perhaps that dream involved Ming attacking him nude.
Here's my theory on it. I bet he had, like, an entire litany of penises to choose from. And then he really just – he was so impressed with the majesty of Ming's penis that he put it into the film.
I would imagine Ming's penis is very 70s, you know, very hairy, afro-ish, if you will. Yeah, I mean, it's I'm sure it's a sight, and God love him for it, you know. I
God
mean, we should
him.
All be so lucky.
Yeah,
we should.
He could probably find a million. So he'll find a million ways to hurt you with that penis.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, why do you think that you know, he famously won matches with by choking people out, you
right.
know, with the claw or whatever it was, the Tongan death grip. Yep. What people didn't know is that he was also secretly grabbing them with his other tongue.
That's right in the back. Speaking of right in the back, Russo's poised. They're getting ready to fight. And
It's a throwdown.
It's about to happen. Russo, Bischoff, one for the ages. And then they frickin' hug.
Oh, the first swerve of the night, they hug. And I'll tell you what, Aaron, it's a poorly executed hug from a production standpoint. I think the cameras look at somebody else when they actually initiate contact. This is WCW magic, people. They miss almost the swerve with the camera. It's fucking brilliant. Oh, there goes an explicit for Apple, sorry, America, or the world again.
Don't need to worry about that. And then they're talking about they were both screwed over by the Good Old Boys Network, and Bischoff starts listing off some big stars that were his mistakes, like Sting, DDP, Sid, he wish he was vicious. And he then says his biggest mistake is Hulk Hogan. At this point,
We cut to the back at this point, right?
Yes.
And we see Sting, Paige Falkenberg, I think that's his name.
Yeah.
No, Diamond Dallas Page, Kimberly Sting, and Lex Luger and Miss Elizabeth that clearly just got done having sex somewhere in the arena. They are trying so hard not to laugh and really just giving each other the fuck eyes. It's kind of cute in a way, if you know. You take out the overdosing.
Is that why Luger can hardly walk for the rest of the show? Or is that just the drugs?
God, poor. We'll get to it in his match, but geez, Lex is hurting.
They are standing around the smallest monitor I've ever seen.
Well, it is 2000. They may not have had the technology, but it is very small for the million. Well, they're not the Millionaires Club yet, but yeah, so they're watching, they're taking it all in. Bischoff is talking mad smack about these guys. I feel like they should come to the arena or come down the aisle personally.
I agree. And I will say they're around the tiny monitor, but at least they're standing in a human position to be watching a television.
Yes. And Bischoff's throwing around a lot of inside references too. And again, as a little 16-year-old kid who read shit on the internet, I'm kind of loving it. This is what I paid for on free TV. Well, my parents were paying for cable. But, like, I came – this is the shit I came here for.
Yeah.
Bischoff says something about XYZ, and it's like, oh, shit, I read that on Scoops or Top Rope or whatever, and I know what he's talking about.
Yeah. And then Bischoff's apologizing to everybody in the ring. He's calling them the New Blood. And at this point, I'm like, is everyone in the ring the New Blood and – Luger, DDP, Sid, and Sting? Or is it everyone against them?
It's a pretty damn big group of new blood. Again, we did mention Brian Knobbs and Finley are out there, right?
Yes.
New.
There's nothing new about Brian Knobbs.
No.
Like, that's a used-up man if I've ever seen one.
And that's another problem, too, is that this should literally be a moment where you're – you know, when you're doing a reboot, if you're at a comic that's a reboot or anything like that, you know that they give you a big picture of what they're changing. They give you some real details on what they're changing, and they leave you with a big cliffhanger. We need details, folks. I get that everyone in the ring are the people you haven't been pushing. Okay, I have that meta knowledge. But what does this mean for WCW as a wrestling promotion, a television program? What are we doing?
Yeah, and okay, but all the people, like, so is it a wrestling program where people fight for wins and losses?
Well, I mean, if I'm to believe the programs that I've seen previously, no, because there's a creative department. What the hell's going on?
I can understand a creative department is like, okay, you're a wrestler who's going to fight this and that. You want a little more pizzazz? I'm going to get you a costume. Like, if that was the creative department, I'm okay with it.
Sure, like a promoter. A Don King promoter. Like, I mean,
or designer.
You know, I think that's probably...
I'm okay with designer also.
Sure. You know, someone who's got your back. I've got your back, Jeff. You know, you're the chosen... Oh, it's a shitty Russo. Where's Justin? Or JT?
you know.
I mean, seriously.
Where is he?
I don't know. Look, here's the thing, Eric. Yeah. We need to get creative when it comes to Big Vito and Johnny the Bull. They're two good kids. They used to come to my video store. We need to get creative.
DDP saunters out in an absurd jacket. Eric makes fun of Sid for playing softball. Now, this is where it's starting to get real inside, right? But then he mocks...
You're real inside baseball here.
Then he mocks Lex Luger for knowing Michael Jordan. Like, well, what's the problem with that?
I think they're... I mean, that's the thing. First of all, I refuse to believe that, unless someone out there can prove me otherwise, that Luger and Jordan have had lunch in a one-on-one setting together.
Do you think if Luger didn't pick up the check, Jordan would take that personally?
I mean, there's going to be chaos in the Windy City one way or the other. you know, Luger, I mean, I know they're both like Chicago, quote unquote, athletes or whatever.
They're the pillars of Chicago's athletic community. Michael Jordan and Lex Luger.
It's Jordan, Luger, CM Punk, and Mancow.
That's right. Who we see not at this show, but he's coming.
No. Yeah, he's coming.
Sadly, he's coming. I never liked short hair DDP.
I don't know. I'm okay with it, I guess, because when I see long hair DDP, I really think of that like I just won Battle Bowl DDP, which is just gross.
Yeah, I need an in between. I like jeans and taped up ribs DDP.
Oh, well, yes, the ribs. God, that's such a thing. The ribs. No rib injuries here.
His ribs were injured for so long that it made it into the Nintendo 64 game that he's wearing tape on his ribs.
Oh, man. It's like Owen's cast, except, you know, wasn't played for a joke.
No.
But yeah, the ribs, the Savage feud, that DDP stuff. I mean, I even appreciate when they gave him, you know, his title run. Or I wouldn't call it a run, but, you know, it was something different, and WCW was a promotion that, yeah, I was on the fringes of, but I knew that everybody knew the score. Hogan, Flair, Nash, Goldberg, those are your guys. And the DDP, I do like the DDP story, just a side note. Like,
sure.
I like that he, you know, but yeah, short hair DDP, ready to rumble DDP, if you will, is good. I'm going to just contradict you. It's my preferred DDP. It's less trashy.
Fair enough.
Well,
I like trash but DDP, he does, though. But
well, whatever. He does show up in a Soprano shirt in a few weeks.
Can't wait. Can't wait to get there. DDP wants Bischoff to step off. I think it's really telling that DDP is the mouthpiece of this group.
That's because we're supposed to know that DDP and Kimberly have been allegedly hooking up with the Bischoffs. Like, we're supposed to know this.
I don't know if I've ever really seen Eric Bischoff's wife in this era, but Bischoff's getting the better part of this deal than DDP, right?
I mean, I don't know. I've seen the 40-year-old version. I don't know that Kimberly aged the greatest. And again, I'm not that I'm like, you know, some sort of Adonis, but I'm just saying, I don't know. Kimberly's not really my thing.
Well, clearly you're too good for Kimberly. I get it. I understand. I understand exactly what you're saying. Scott Hudson, of course, is jumping in with like, that's true. Everything he's saying is true. Not letting anything breathe. And then Russo gets on the mic and he wants to get personal. He says, Ric Flair's hiding back there. And he then calls Ric Flair a piece of shit. Do you think 2000 Ric Flair probably agrees with that sentiment?
We'll see from his wrestling attire that he very much agrees with Mr. Russo.
Right. So Russo then is...
The cat is tickled pink that Russo said shit on TV, by the way. Spoiler alert, Ernest the Cat Miller is the best part of WCW 2000. We'll get there.
He's great. I love him in WWF 2004.
Right. Ernest the Cat Miller, if you're listening, you're a winner. A winner is you.
I feel like if Chris Benoit hadn't murdered his family, we'd see a lot of more of that Ernest the Cat Miller Royal Rumble 2004 appearance.
Oh, man. We still have all got to get my shoes. I can't do a good cat. I probably shouldn't try to do a cat, but he's so fucking funny.
Yeah, he's hilarious. Anywho. Somebody call my mama. All right, so they're stripping all the titles. He takes the tag titles from the Harris brothers. Hey, that's the best thing he's ever done, is take the titles off those two.
Absolutely. Hey, side note, the question for you, Aaron. Do you think that they're pissed off they have to stand that close to Booker T?
Oh, yes.
Allegedly.
Yes. But they're kind of probably scared of Ernest the Cat Miller, so they're keeping quiet, right? The guy who could probably legitimately destroy them.
3-time world karate champion.
That's it. You don't mess around with that. So Knobs hands over I guess it's the hardcore title. They had a hardcore title. And then they want to go get Sid's belt. And Sid's like, why don't you come get it? Which is great because I love Sid so much. And they call Sid the Millennium Man, which I had forgotten that they called him that. Like, did they need to copy that gimmick from WWF 2, the Millennium Man?
Man, it's so bad too, because I think they did like a streak gimmick where he was getting Shriek numbers by choke slamming people.
Yeah. Oh, three, only. 4, 10. Is this in here? Are we gonna? Is this already happened? Where Goldberg destroys his car?
Yes, because that's when he gets hurt. That's when Goldberg gets hurt, okay. Right?
Yeah, because that is
Goldberg. Yeah.
That's the best unintentional comedy of all time.
Yes, that has already happened. Even though the crowd is begging for Goldberg at numerous times throughout WCW 2000, he doesn't come back until June. He's out until right. June.
Why me? Why? Him standing on top of a car. I love too. There's a great bit too where he's like, "Where's my car? It's in lot 7." And Sid goes, "Lot 7?" As though that means anything. Like, don't sell it before you see it.
Oh, like, Lot 7 is just known. It yeah. is known. It is known. Lot 7 is where, it's the death of all cars.
That's
it
why
is
cars
known.
Get destroyed. So then Bischoff goes to get the belt, and here we get, this is the ultimate insider comment, right?
Oh, you don't get more insider than this.
What does he say to him?
Sid doesn't want to give up the belt. And Eric says, "What's the matter, Sid? I'm getting to the punchline. What's the matter, Sid? Can't find your scissors." Nobody reacts.
No.
Because
– And that's so telling.
Yeah, these are just regular people.
Yeah.
Side question for you. Did this bring you flashbacks to your childhood when the scissor man would come to your house to sharpen your scissors?
I don't want to talk about the scissor man. Like, look, the scissor man would have been fine if the ice cream truck didn't come once. Because the fact that the ice cream truck came one time was like every time you heard that bell, you like got excited. Like, if I just known it was the scissor man from the beginning, I never would have had a problem with it.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot. You hear the sex bell. Do you want the sex man, the ice cream man, or the scissor man to come to your house? Because that's what started all this, right? The sex entrance music?
I want the power to go off in my house so that I can just go to bed when that happens. That's what I want.
So, yeah, nobody reacts. Sid kind of looks like, did you really just say that? Even though he probably knew you were going to say that. Mm-hmm. So Bischoff makes the classic actor mistake, he yep. repeats the line.
And again,
and still no reaction. Yeah, no reaction.
Nobody heard me tell this joke.
16-year-old me is calling my friends, telling them they got to watch Nitro. Holy shit! They just talked about the scissors, man.
Sid almost killed someone. Let's make this a throwaway line in a storyline. He almost right. legitimately murdered Arn Anderson.
Absolutely. Sid eventually, after some stalling, and Bischoff, see, this is kind of an interesting thing. Bischoff threatens him. He's like, and this is Bischoff on top of his game. He's like, Sid, you look like you want to hit me. Go ahead. I'll recover. Your career won't. You hit me. You're done. So it's like, yeah, I'm the champion. And I guess in the storyline, I'm making extra money because I'm the champion. But if I get fired, I have no money. Why not run with logic?
Yeah, exactly.
So he gives up the gusto and, Tony, we've got no champions.
Yeah. They're going to have to fight to get their position back.
Oh, I have the direct quote. The call to arms in the ring is done. They have all the belts. We have no champions. They cut to Tony and Mark and Scott. And Tony literally says, it seems as if the groundwork has been laid that the established talent must fight to get their name back. The established talent must fight to get their name back. What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like they took – you're no longer called Lex Luger. They didn't strip them of their names. And in Madden calls –
Yeah, and they
– Go on.
Well, no, I was just going to say they didn't – and they didn't – we'll see throughout the night that they do – take things from them, but there was no insinuation that this was some sort of like they didn't even lay out what the problem was. Like, we know, like, we all have the meta knowledge, the new blood versus whomever they are, we don't know yet. It's a young versus old type of deal, but they don't even lay that out. It's failure from minute one.
Yeah, which is it's a fine story, young versus old. I think there's something interesting.
I agree.
There.
It's okay.
But not like this. in the words of Gorilla Monsoon, not like this.
Or the chick with blonde hair from The Matrix. Not like this.
Madden then calls Flair and Hogan the two most established stars on WCW, which I think is insane. And then he goes, they've been verbally abused.
Like, oh, well, somebody call him a lawyer. Yeah. All right. And speaking of the devil, Stone Cold Terry Bollea arrives late to the arena. Just in time for the commercial break.
In a very tight white shirt.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, there's a reason he wore white, and it's not his wedding night.
Nope. Sting comes in and calls him Terry, which I don't want on television.
Oh, I love this segment. This is a I'm not a professional match rater. Folks, this is a 5-star segment. Continue.
Well, I just think, too, because, like, Russo's whole thesis is, like, the big guy, the older guys don't care about the business, and they're only out for themselves. That's just kind of his whole thesis, right? Doesn't Hogan...
Yeah, well, and to go... Well, just to pivot back to him talking about Flair, we made a shit joke. That actually makes sense. Russo's a New York guy. He's like San Martino, sports entertainment type thing. Flair's the exact opposite. Their alignment as hero-villain... does make sense from the story that they're trying to tell, because they know that, you know, Vince Russo is very much WWF. That's been established in the canon. So this isn't necessarily an insider thing, but of course they're not smart enough to run with it. It's just more like Flair, you know,
piece of shit,
you piece of shit, you know, on the bottom of my shoe.
Yeah, like,
my expensive New York loafers.
What's the worst thing I can say on television? Can I say shit? Like, I'm sure that was a conversation backstage. But doesn't Hogan showing up at this point of the show kind of prove Russo's point?
Oh, it absolutely does. And there's an even greater offender that we'll get into later. Yes. There's three more, like two or three more.
Yeah, like, okay, how about we show up on time for the show? How about that?
Yeah, but yeah, Terry and Steve are in the back.
Yeah, and Steve's like, Bischoff's on to him. So take us through this segment, because I didn't take a lot of notes on this segment, but you seem to really enjoy it.
He's like, so Bischoff's on to you. And Hogan basically says something to the effect, like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, Bischoff's talking, you know, I'm summing it up here. Bischoff's talking a lot of smack about you. And Hogan kind of looks at him, and Sting goes, I'm not ribbing you.
Oh, yeah.
And Terry stands up, goes to the door, and he's like, you better not be ribbing me, brother. And he's like, I'm not ribbing you. And they just cut to commercial or whatever the hell it is next. It's glorious because 16-year-old me, I know what ribbing is. But what the hell is this?
Yeah.
This is it's fantastic. And just to see, oh God, you know these guys, and you know that they were told to make sure you use rib, like make sure, you know, so people think it's real. Like, and just Sting is just the worst actor ever. Yeah.
If you want it to look real, get him out of his face paint.
Yeah, there's a good start. and just, but at the same time, it's like, hey man, he's literally just telling him that Bischoff said mean things about him. That's it.
What did he say, brother? Yeah. Did he say something mean about my family, man? Low-key Hulk Hogan always makes me laugh. Because we're so used to hearing him scream. Yeah.
what do you mean? You wouldn't say you're ripping me, bro. You wouldn't say that. I know.
I'm Hulk.
Yeah,
Hogan.
So it's just it's just brilliant. It's brilliant and it's poor execution. It's everything that you love about the wrong-sidedness of what they were trying to do. So that's why it's a 5-star segment for me personally.
I love it. Love it.
So there's no ribbing for Sting, nope. No ribbing for Hogan, no ribbing for Her Pleasure. We're done. No ribbing.
No ribbing at this point. So we're competing in a mini tournament to see who fights Jeff Jarrett for the title at Spring Stampede. So
I like the idea of Jarrett cashing in as the number one contender because he was the U.S. champ. It's something that's lacking in the modern product.
Yeah.
There's no reason that Intercontinental champion shouldn't be able to like cash in for an automatic shot if they've held the belt for like a certain amount of days or whatever. I don't know.
I don't mind that at all. What I do mind, before we get into any of it, is if they're so against all these guys, why are they in the tournament?
That's another thing. Like, they never acknowledged the very true statement that, and it's a throwaway line from Eric. It could have been real simple. You know what? I'm going to put you on my show. People love you, but you don't have a chance in hell. That's my original impression. But just give me a narrative reason for why they're allowed to compete still if you're in charge of creative.
And that's kind of what Austin and Vince always did well. Because at first it was like, well, Austin makes me money, you know? And then it was like, oh, he snuck in a contract. They always at least tried to cover their basis as to why he doesn't just fire him.
They always had an in-universe, which is kind of a comic-y term. There was always – that's the thing about WWF. They usually had an in-universe reason for why things happened, and that's what made them a superior storytelling product.
Now, they don't do that anymore.
Not necessarily – oh, well, no. I mean, come on. We're talking about the good old days when it was on TNN, the good old boy network.
Good old boys.
But yeah, they and you know, for the most part, they usually had but you know, to get back to what we're talking about, and this is narratively important, there's logic. There's a reason. Why.
Yeah, I just want and it takes a second. Like you just said, Bischoff could have just said that. So DDP comes out to his old music. Again, I don't know if it's on the network, but in mine, he came out to the Self High Five, which I loved. I thought it was great. They cut off his music halfway down. It's like they're taking it from him. And I'll be honest, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah.
Like, I was like,
it's the first sign of larger storytelling.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way.
Yeah, and so the first matchup of the tournament is DDP versus Luger. Luger comes out with Elizabeth, and it really is as depressing as it sounds because Luger can't walk, and it's just strange. And go on.
Luger deserves an award here, though, because they also cut his music, which doesn't allow him to pose. And he's just like, he looks like someone shitting his cereal. Like, he wants to pose so bad. Like, it's the most important thing. But it's not like in a silly, childish way. It's like, you believe that the Lex Luger character really wants this.
Yeah, and Madden backs it up. He goes, if he can't pose, he'll quit.
And then... Yeah, and Hudson says that's like 90% of the presentation, which is, again, another internet joke. Like, yeah, we all know that Luger can't work at this point. He's all sizzle. Like, 16-year-old John is like, oh, boy.
But
it's bad.
But Hudson's the face announcer, and Luger's the face.
Well, but that's the thing. And Madden eventually is all over Team Package for being, old and get out of the way. He's 2 weeks ago, he was singing their praises, literally saying things like Flair's the greatest of all time and stuff. That's why I wanted to do that recap. It doesn't make narrative sense.
No.
I know he's the heel commentator, but put a little effort into it.
Yeah. And then Hudson's like, look at all the hoops that Russo and Bischoff are making these two jump through. It's like, it's just entrance music taken away.
Yeah.
It's not a hoop.
That's quite a line by Hudson. I don't get it.
He's just way overplaying it. Like, what are you going to say when they, like, take them out of the tournament? Or, you know, like, you got nowhere to go. They don't give Luger the spotlights either. And then Tony goes, the mind games continue. And like, I think it'd be fine if the commentators weren't acting like this was some kind of genius plan.
I would love to know how much they were let into ahead of time as to what was going to be the format, if you will, which I think gets a shout out later, because there's always the thing about sometimes they do or don't know the outcomes of the matches. Because I got to think that these three people could have thought of something better to say if they weren't have to do it in the spur of the moment.
Oh, I'm sure they didn't tell them.
I want to believe that.
I believe they didn't tell them shit. Hudson then goes, Ric Flair was verbally turned to shreds. Like, all he said was that he was a piece of shit. Like, I'm sure he's
– yeah.
Like, the hyperbole is just, like, off the charts. So, I mean, it's pretty telling that 60-year-old DDP is the most mobile person in this match.
Yeah, Luger at one point hits his version of the Three Amigos, which are three backbreakers. And the man desperately, desperately looks like he needs a fix after the first – and it gets worse after the second. And by the third, I mean, we go to the finish pretty quick.
Well, Luger throws a clothesline and, like, stumbles through it.
Yeah, I remember that.
I really think, like, this is such a sad way for him to be remembered, because watching, like, late 80s, early 90s WCW, I think Luger is really good.
Like, his... Well, and you...
Go ahead, man.
Well, on the, you know, on the Wrestling War Zone, right, which I believe is on the North-South Connection podcast.
Every
network,
other Thursday, JT and Chad.
They do such a great job of bringing Luger's greatness to the forefront. And it's true. I mean, he is a MVP player in those years. And, of course, you get your early stuff, which I know is what you were talking about. You know, but it's just like this bloated... I know that Luger's like turned it around, and I guess, but this is, yeah, it's sad. I mean, it's unfortunate. You're watching, it's like heading in TNA that you guys always talk about. It's, I mean, you know, the writing's on the wall, you know, what's going to happen. You see Liz out there. It's sad. I don't know. Another way to put it.
I mean, like, cause like there is a, like Luger's great in the late 80s. And then you're right in 90s, like JT and Chad are chronicling on, Wrestling Warzone, Luger's great. And this, I think this and his performances in the New Generation, which you can hear about on New Gen on a Mission, Justin Pratt and Tim Slomka every other Wednesday, breaking down the New Generation era. People remember only these things about him. And it doesn't bother me, but it bothers me, you know, because I'm tired of having to defend Luger as a great worker. He's got a lot of great stuff.
Right. It's like if we just remembered what, you know, when Macho Man was in his bone saw phase. We right. don't. We remember the real Macho Man, but, you know, the end there was pretty, pretty dire.
Yeah. So this match is kind of chugging along very slowly, and out of nowhere, Buff Bagwell's music plays, and he comes out flexing.
The nerve.
Yeah, and then, so this distracts Luger, then DDP low blows him, but doesn't go for the pin. Instead, he just stomps him. And then Buff comes out and hits on Kimberly. This distracts DDP. Luger's nuts are fine all of a sudden. Then Buff is harassing Liz. And then Lex gets distracted and gets hit in a diamond cutter. Like, why didn't we just do one distraction?
Well, I mean, because Buff is the stuff and everybody needs to, you know, just be in his aura. You know, if he doesn't sexually harass both of the valets, it's not going to be to the year 2000.
That's true. Buff's appearance here is like the purest form of douchebag I've ever seen.
Well, and you said, I don't know, you watched it. I watched it on Peacock. I thought DDP hit him with an RKO at the end. What did you say happened? Well,
was it out of nowhere?
Well, I mean, I was doing the dishes at the time, so for me it was out of nowhere. I just heard, you know. But and this is also our first sort of pairing of mirror versions of one another that are going to be destined to be enemies in this new era of WCW. We've got Luger, who's a muscle-bound dude, versus Buff, who's a younger muscle-bound dude. It's your DC versus Marvel. Again, it makes a whole lot of sense, and this is the first, like, honest to God, we're both wrestlers pairing.
Right. Right.
Of new mortal enemies.
Yeah, and at the very least, I want to see wrestlers paired off against other wrestlers.
Right. And again, the logic's in the right spot. I don't think anybody wants to see a match between them happen, but, you know, we will.
Yeah, over and over.
What kind of star ranking do you star people give that? Did you rank it? Did you bother to?
Not really, because it's nothing. Like,
I gave it a star for Madden claiming that Liz kissed Buff, which kind of reminded me of something Heenan would say.
Yeah, I'd probably be at about a star too. It's not the worst thing I've ever seen, but poor Lex Luger. Like it really feels like he needs to stop wrestling.
Well, we'll get there. but yeah, it's too bad.
So now we cut immediately away from this to Hogan walking in the hall looking for Eric, but he's nowhere to be found. And when we cut again,
this fucker is knocking on every door in the arena, by the way.
I know. Yeah. And then we cut to Kurt Hennig in I've never seen this piece of clothing before. Turtleneck.
Was that Kurt Hennig or Randy Quaid from Nash Lampoon's Christmas Vacation? Because I believe that's what Cousin Eddie wears under his sweater in that entire film.
Is that when he tells you the shitter is full?
Well, hey, Did I ever tell you? Can you imagine Cousin Eddie after he told the neighbors that she was full, reminiscing about the time he took down Brock Lesnar?
And by the way, Elaine from Seinfeld, I was on a plane.
I took down Brock Lesnar, Elaine. You should have seen it.
You should have seen it. And then I died. Henning wants to know why he was excluded from this tournament. And then it's with Eric, right? Eric's like, if you beat
Jeff. Well, no, it's with Russo because this is a callback to the Powers That Be era, because Henning was his gopher, if you will.
Right, right, right. And this is a prelude to TNA, where Henning is dragged out. But if Henning beats Jarrett tonight, he gets his shot. We cut back to the arena. So much of the crowd is blacked out. Like, that's something I noticed.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be doing wide shots because it doesn't look good.
No. Before he exits stage left, I want to get in another prop for Madden, who, just to say a little – well, spoiler alert, he's about to be cut off the broadcast. I don't know where you stand on Madden. I've made a lot of references to 16-year-old me. 16-year-old me loved Mark Madden because Mark Madden – said things like Snoochie Boochies, which was like a Kevin Smith reference, and, you know, who was a film director, if anybody out there cares. And, you know, he knows all the internet jokes, and he makes reference to things. He's a heel commentator. He gets a great dig in on Hogan, who's opening every door in the arena looking for Bischoff. He says, "What is this, Spinal Tap?" I thought that was kind of clever.
Yeah, that's a good line. I don't have an opinion on him because I don't remember him at all.
Okay.
So this will be me discovering him. Well, I will say though, when I started watching TNA, I really hated Ed Ferrara at first on commentary, but then he actually became an enjoyable part of the show. And
heel commentary is a dead art.
Yeah. So I'm kind of thinking that he'll be okay going forward. I'm not worried. Like, I'm more worried about Scott Hudson being Tony, what's his name? Mike Tenay.
Mike Tenay.
Yeah, that's going to bother me a lot more.
Yes, sir.
Out comes Tank Abbott in some shorts he clearly bought at Walmart the day of. And they call him the baddest man, but then call him David Tank Abbott. And I don't know, nothing against the name David, but like, not the toughest name in the world, I feel.
Or the, oh God, Tank Abbott. Oh, I just don't even know where to start with this guy. He looks like every uncle stereotype you've ever heard.
He looks like an out of shape Jim Neidhart.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. He's got that same crazy, but I would say it's probably longer goatee.
Yeah.
He's also fresh off his victory in a skins match at, I think it's at Super Brawl where he fights. No, he fights. Well, he fights like Jerry Flynn, or he fights some guy who he was like friends with. And it's when he pulls out the knife and Tony Schiavone said, yeah, he's like, "I will fucking kill you." And Tony Schiavone goes, "Oh, I think he was going to cut his beard." It's, I mean, if you like wrestle crap, which is a registered trademark of not me, seek that out. It's fantastic.
Yeah. It was
but yeah. Tank Abbott's just, I mean, he's dirty. I don't know. He looks like what I imagine COVID is.
He's the human embodiment of COVID-19?
I mean, why do you think it's so tough to beat?
Oh, he's the baddest man on the planet, right? He starts.
Well, I'm the registered trademark of Don King Incorporated.
Right.
You can't say that.
Well, especially since Shamrock's gone. So he says this. This is how he starts. He goes, "I'm going to say this one times.
I'm not a candy ass wrestler."
Yeah. I'm so mad at his disregard for plural versus singular. Like, just have a little bit of respect. I've never heard anyone say that in my life. One times.
Yeah. It's so funny because he wants to basically insult us for liking wrestling or wrestlers for being fake wrestlers, but he cannot command the language in which he speaks. So he's just as quote unquote, I guess, trashy as them.
Right.
I don't get it.
Well, if you were flipping through the channels and you flipped on this guy, you would turn away right away, I feel.
And Yeah.
Unless you had maybe if you had a concept of who he was, maybe like, oh my God, he's here. But if you don't know he's like a shoot fighter or anything, like there's no way you're watching this person on TV. They would never put him on TV today.
Well, also, can you imagine, like, this is what mixed martial arts used to look like? I mean, this is like unregulated UFC where there's you fight at one tournament in one night, multiple matches in one night, no weight limits. I mean,
no weight classes.
David Tank Abbott is, wow, he's just the early UFC in a bottle, ready to drink.
Yeah. Ugh. And then he's like, I'm not somebody who's wiggling his tongue and acting tough. And then at that point, I'm like, is he talking about Goldberg? And then he's like, I want Goldberg. So he really hammers it home.
And then it's Goldberg versus, Tank on the old versus screen there. Again, we've got another DC versus Marvel match here.
Right. Yeah. And then he's like, I'm going to start beating up innocent victims until Bill fights me. And he doesn't care if it's Mother Teresa. I don't know where he came up with that. Then he goes and beats up Mark Madden, which people actually cheer for.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly supposed to be a heel here. He picks the heel commentator to beat up. I don't know. I've never liked this segment because it takes Madden off commentary, but I don't get it. I mean, this gimmick does continue, but here's the thing, guys. He's been in a feud with Doug Dillinger. I'm not making this up. Tank Abbott has been in a feud with Doug Dillinger. Why not just grab him?
Yeah, beat up Tank Doug Dillinger, yeah.
I mean, it's I don't get it. And he rips Madden's shirt off, which I'm sure is one of those like classic things that they didn't tell him they were going to do. And, they did it to pop the boys in the back.
He probably had to go home without a shirt.
Oh, the poor man. If you really pay attention, though, here – he grabs Madden, throws him over the table. So in universe or in the plot, I'm assuming that Madden's hurt from that. He punches him twice and walks away.
In the hip.
And they're weak looking punch.
In the hip.
They're weak. They're weak ass punches. And I just don't, because I feel like Dillinger probably could have been a bit more physical. I'm not saying it's a good idea, but it's a better idea.
Yeah, than beating up Mark Madden for no reason. And then throughout this thing, while he's punching him, Scott Hudson's like, should we do something? Just get in there, you coward.
Well, I mean, Tony Schiavone, he gets that at home, so he doesn't want to get it at work.
No.
No, I love Tony Schiavone, allegedly.
Schiavone's the best.
He is great.
So now we're cutting to the back, and Jarrett is bitching. I hate these segments where Jarrett's mad because he has to wrestle. Like, that's it's your job.
I mean, this is your opportunity to prove that you're the chosen one. I get from an in-universe perspective, he doesn't want to lose, like, the shot. But at the same time, he should have the confidence to beat Mr. Imperfect.
Right. Yeah, I think he could probably do that. And then Russo's like...
But Russo,
go on, you can go for it.
Well, I was going to say, Russo reassures him by letting him know that, don't worry, there's a plan. Do I look like J.J. Dillon to you?
Yeah. Fuck.
I mean, I just came, by the way, 16-year-old me.
Right.
I'm like, this is fantastic, but it's just, it makes no sense in a vacuum.
It's so insane.
Or as a casual viewer, like, if you're literally, when you reboot something or when you relaunch a product, you want every dumbass that bought it before is going to buy it again, hypothetically. You want new eyeballs. This doesn't make any bit of sense. They're writing for the internet. I sound like a robot at this point.
You might have heard about Sid stabbing Arn Anderson, right? Definitely a possibility if you're online. But like, because his whole thing is, trust me, I'm not. It's all about trust, what he's talking about. That's a far stretch for us to think that J.J. Dillon backstage is not trustworthy.
Right.
Like, he's not referencing J.J. Dillon, the manager of the Four Horsemen. He's referencing J.J. Dillon, the head of talent relations.
Absolutely. And it just – we have no frame of reference for that.
No.
It's just, it's annoying. It's like, I don't know. I'm not going to come up with a shitty example on the fly. It's bad. We just all know it's bad. Yeah, all right.
It's so absurd. Kidman is storming around and Tori's just following. We just have these vignettes of people running around the building. Hogan's looking for Bischoff. He finds Terry Taylor. I'm like, how many cameras do they have backstage at various locations?
Well, a couple of things to mention here. The Kid, as he'll come to be known, has something to get off his chest, and he needs his hat from Tori so he can put it on backwards and look cool.
Yeah, why does every New Blood person have to have the hat on backwards?
Well, it's a youth thing. I don't know. Kidman looks good with the backwards hat, but I wish we could Rastafy him by about 15% or whatever percent they Rastafy Pucci. But here's what's glorious about the end of this segment is that Hogan runs into the Rooster, who's a member of the Good Old Boys Network. I have meta knowledge of as an internet viewer, by the way. So mm-hmm. Why the fuck is he allowed to be a gorilla? So Hogan says, "Where's Bischoff?" And I kid you not, I rewound it three times to make sure I got it verbatim. Second door on the left. We cut to commercial. Now, commercials, Aaron, would you say 3-4 minutes? Being conservative?
Yeah, I mean, look, even if it was two. Let's
we
give
come
him credit.
Back from commercial, and Mr. Bolea is knocking on the – has just come to the door to knock. What the fuck was he doing?
Maybe he had to build up his confidence to confront his friend.
God, now I want to see – I want the real behind-the-scenes footage of him being like, "Oh, come on, brother. You got to get in there. Come on. Linda's counting on you, bro. Think about Nick. Think about the Pokemon. Oh, come on, dude. Yeah. Think about Brooke Teeny."
It's like when Jake Roberts got the arrogance sprayed in his eyes, and the end of Superstars was the doctor saying – "Jake, next week. We won't know until next week. Next week, Jake." Like, it's clearly just like, give me anything that like doesn't make it seem like you're waiting during the commercial to knock on the door.
Yeah, again, you know, or I mean, why not just, I mean, look, if you're going for realism, how about moments? Because all they do is, so Hogan gets back, he knocks on the door, Bischoff opens kind of like, "Uh-oh, Hogan's here." You know, sells him a bill of goods like, brother, they're ribbon. Yeah, he doesn't actually say that, but come on in. We'll straighten this out. Why not just put a little bumper on it that says moments ago?
Yeah.
It's a brief, like, 30-second interaction. How about, "Fans, this happened while we were away."
Yeah. Or cut in and they're in mid-argument or whatever. Like, I'm okay with any of those. But no, they're not doing that. They're not – it's like they're striving for realism, but not.
Like – And their whole interaction really makes Hogan look, for lack of a more scientific term, wimpy. Because again, it's like, "Well, brother, Stinger said you're saying things about me, bro." I mean, that's kind of riddle-ish. But it's like, what's the motivation here for Hulk Hogan, who is, you know, I guess a badass? I mean, like his character anyway, he's supposed to be like a badass. I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah, why
what's he afraid
just,
of?
Why doesn't he just go home? He has a contract.
Yeah.
Oh, they don't want me here?
Yeah, he does.
I'll go home and get paid.
Yeah.
So now
sure, brother. Brooke Teeny needs a dad. So, yeah. Oh, well.
Kidman's in the ring in his street clothes, and he starts by saying he feels like he's been handed a get-out-of-jail-free card. Such a stupid fucking reference. He's been held down by egomaniacs holding on to their faded careers. But tonight is his night. The problem is everyone is saying the same shit. To say shit again. He wants to address Hulk Hogan. He has two things that Hogan will never have: heart and talent. Are we really saying that Hulk Hogan has no talent?
I mean, brother, I'm sorry. I'll fight you tooth and nail that Hogan's got some talent. I'm sorry. I mean, he's the reason we're all here, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, this doesn't make sense from multiple reasons. Real quick, as the Kid's walking out of the ring, they do cut back to Lady J. I do have that in my notes. Oh. But yeah.
Was Shipwreck hitting on her ringside?
No, but in a nice touch, in a very modern touch, damn it, I can't remember his name. The guy that turns into a whale. Iceberg.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Is he the
Iceberg
the snow guy?
She was with Iceberg, and it was nice.
Very nice.
But yeah, it's it's so strange because there is no in the weeks leading up to this, I think I'm into this, Booker and Kid, the Kid and Kidman were going for the tag titles. That's their plot. They're a makeshift tag team. It's a will they, won't they get along, because there's a little bit of undertone that Booker has eyes for Tori. It's very mega powers slash, you know, I can't believe they're actually doing this because it's WCW and they'll probably find a way to make it awful and racist. But, you know, Booker and Tori, which is a totally fine thing as a couple, but that's what they're going for.
Right.
Before this. And it's all erased. And Kidman's calling out Hogan. Again, folks, say it with me. We've got another pairing and it's crazy.
Yeah, and but this one is like, it's like Superman fighting J. Jonah Jameson.
Oh, yeah. Crossover. I mean, yeah, absolutely. It's mind-boggling. You know, it's Black Widow versus Jubilee. You know, she's breaking neck instantly.
Yeah, dead. And Kidman continues. He goes, apparently his orange skin is from being in the spotlight, which Scott Hudson's like, checkmate. So he just nailed it.
I also have checkmate in my notes. You know, I think that reference also pops Scott Keith and Scott Hudson.
Oh, really? And then he goes, well, Hogan's a pile of shit. He calls him a pile of shit again. And Hudson's like, good night. Like, it's not that – these are not that great insults. Am I insane thinking that?
I swear to God, I have this in my notes. It's a question I wanted to pose to you. Because he will say it more and more frequently, do you prefer Hudson's good night or Mauro Ranallo's Mamma Mia?
I guess Mamma Mia, because it always at least comes out of something big happening.
Yeah, but I mean, he still says Mamma Mia.
He's Italian.
And I have no problem. Look, I don't know if I'm going to lose internet credibility. I don't really give a fuck, but I don't know. I see no difference between Mauro and Scott Hudson, to be honest with you, in a lot of ways.
You know, it's very possible you're right. However, I think Mauro stands out as an actually excited person, which is something we don't have on any other WWE program. So I think maybe if we compare him directly to like the commentators of this era or earlier, he's not good or he's annoying. But I think he's just in such stark contrast to like, oh my, and boss time.
You're right. He does stand out, and that is a positive thing. I just, you know, and I have no ill will towards Mauro. I just, when he said good night, for some reason, I heard Mamma Mia. You know, it is what it is.
Is good it night is a Scott is. Hudson thing that he's going to say over and over again?
Scott Hudson has so many stupid things that he says. Good night is one of them. I can't wait to get to Goldberg's return when he gives Goldberg the worst nickname in the history of professional wrestling.
Is it Coldberg?
You want me to spoil it?
No.
All right. It's yeah.
So Kidman he's calling out Hogan. He wants to know if his balls are as big as his bald spot. That's the one to do good night on. I feel like we're gonna.
Yeah,
do.
Yeah. Because he said balls on TV, which not a big deal, but it's a big deal for like, you know, 2000.
Well, yeah, and he's calling out Hogan his bald spot. Like that's more insulting than just calling him a piece of shit.
Yes, Scott Hudson says clearly he didn't get the memo. It, you know, again, with those internet rumors like, you know, brother Hogan, you're not allowed to talk about the bald spot. It's like, it's just more piling on the internet jar of shit.
Yeah. So American Made blasts and Hogan comes to the ring very slowly. So at this point, I'm like, okay, well, they're going to cut his music off too, right? But then they don't.
Sure. Nope.
He just storms to the ring with his music. Did you ever think for one second he was going to rip that tight white shirt off?
I mean, I don't know that he could have. I mean, I know that he's got the power of the Hulk brother, but that's a tight shirt. Oh, I mean, shit.
If he did his flex pose, at like the one that he does, there's the double bicep, then there's the bicep with the arm straight, and then there's the one where he comes down. I don't know the terms. But if he did that in that shirt would explode.
I think Lady J would also explode. So yes. It's a good thing he didn't.
Yeah. And just think of what poor Iceberg, what would happen to him.
There you go.
They go face to face, and Hogan towers over Kidman.
I mean, it's an interesting visual if, well, they don't do it right, so there's no reason to even think about it. But it's, and I loved, I got to tell you, I loved this when I was younger, because they were elevating Kidman, who was a new main eventer in my head. Like, I was like, oh, cool, they're putting someone new in the main event. This is going to be nice. And, you know, Kidman, I mean, I wouldn't have killed to look like Kidman. I mean, sure, you know, as a facsimile. I mean, he's, but he does, he looks like he's been on downers for quite a while. And I know that's kind of like the gimmick that he had when he was in the Flock.
He had to get out of the Flock.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, he's good shape. He's got the double earrings, like not only on both, in both ears, but multiple on both ears. He's got Tori. Yeah. I mean, Kidman is kind of like a nice facsimile for youth. But yeah, he's short.
Well, it's not just the short too. Like, he's, Hogan's also twice as wide as him. So it's like, I never really watched this, and I heard they were feuding, and I, like you, was like, oh, that's really cool. They're pushing Kidman. Now that I see it, I'm like, this makes no sense.
Yeah. Like, it's the flea market thing too. We can't miss out the, apparently, months before this or weeks before this, Hogan gave some sort of interview, probably with the Sponge, allegedly, and said, you know, Kidman couldn't draw flies at a flea market or something like that. Or they kind of jokingly referred to him as the flea market champion. But this is never, I mean, Kidman has no motivation other than the fact that he's younger than Hogan. And I guess we know, because we're on the internet, Hogan's kind of a prick behind the scenes, allegedly. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't make any narrative sense. I'm digging it because it's new in the day, back in the day. I don't want to feel bad for saying I liked it, because I kind of do like it.
There's nothing wrong with saying you liked it. Maybe it'll turn out great. It just, for me, the visual, like, I'm just like I always thought, like when Hogan fights Shawn Michaels in 05, right? I was like, okay, mm-hmm. That's a bit of a stretch because Michaels is so much smaller. But even Michaels is way bigger than Kidman. And Hogan's much older. So it's just the visual of it is just, whoa, it's jarring. It's like,
yes.
And maybe they'll do it. Maybe I'll see they'll do it in a way that's believable. But from this perspective, it doesn't look like Kidman could even hurt him.
Well, I'll tell you, we don't have to wait very long because they come to blows.
Yeah.
And I think I did count for about 5 seconds. Hogan sells for Kidman. Now, I get that that's a joke, but he does.
Yeah.
He does. He sells for him.
Then Hogan takes right back over, though.
Yeah, he really does. Because Kidman, I think, goes to the outside, and Hogan moves, and he hangs himself on the barricade, which sounds cooler than it actually was. But you know, he gets the old Savage Crush Summit there,
yes,
on the chin, and so Hogan takes over.
And this is all after Hogan called Kidman pee whipped.
Ah, that's right, because you know Hogan can't, brother, I can't really say pussy, brother, because I don't really want Brooke Tini to hear that, but you know.
Hulk Hogan doesn't say pussy, brother.
Now, Terrible Leia might say that, but the character Hulk Hogan isn't going to say that, dude.
That was Hulk Hogan's penis I was describing. You ever hear that testimony in the courtroom?
Oh, hold on. I need to get some pork real quick. Yeah, I have heard that. It's fascinating, allegedly.
What a weird person.
So
then Eric comes out with a chair, and he wants Hogan to hold Kidman. We all know where this is going. Like, it could not be any more telegraphed.
Yeah, obviously Bischoff is going to hit Hogan with that. I'm sorry, Bischoff is going to help Kidman.
Yep.
No, shit. Damn it. I've ruined my joke.
Take it back and pretend like that never just happened.
Yeah, we do know what's going to happen. Obviously, Bischoff is going to help Hogan beat up Kidman.
Shockingly though, that doesn't happen. And
what
Yeah, he hits.
Wait, he pivots?
He swerve. It's called a swerve, Johnny. A swerve.
But he pivots the hips, though.
Yes, he does pivot the hips.
He hits this thing like a bunt.
But Tony, you know who gets swerved is Tony, because he screams, "Oh my God!" like his house is burning down. He's come home and his house is on fire and his family's inside.
I just want to see that. I mean, I don't want to see that happen to Tony Schiavone, but I kind of want to like someone to pay Tony Schiavone on Cameo to do it. React to his house burning down.
I imagine it's got to be worse. And then Kidman pins Hogan and Bischoff counts the fall. And Tony's like, "He cut his forehead," which is the worst way to say he's busted open.
Yeah, and I want to pivot back, brother. Hogan, before Bischoff comes out, is clearly the heel. He is murdering Kidman, not in a way that's like, "This is my vengeance that I've earned." It's brutal. Hudson even busts out that he threw him like a dart,
right?
You know, trying desperately to get something, to call back to something we know. He's heelish a lot. He's clearly the bully here, not to like get really like, you know, sensitive about it, but he's beating his ass for no reason. Well,
he did call him a piece of shit, which
yeah, I guess that's wrestling reason, but I mean, he made his point. Like, this isn't what Hulk Hogan should do, brother.
No, Hulk Hogan should throw him over the top rope and then pose.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is it's weird because I mean, he did come out to American Made. If he had come out to Voodoo Child, I'd be okay with this.
Yeah. He's playing guitar, you know, with Hulk Hogan's penis.
So I think he gets what he deserved. And like you mentioned, Kidman pulls off what Andre could not without, you know, a little plastic surgery, brother. He gets the 1-2-3.
Yeah. Roddy Piper could not. Lots of people could not.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so the fact that this man's not in the Hall of Fame is a miscarriage of justice that I really hope will be remedied in the upcoming years.
He should be in the Hall of Fame just for dating Tori Wilson.
Or that, like, not DMX theme song that he had.
Oh, yes.
That's pretty good. It's not bad.
We're cutting to the back, a limo, out comes Flair. And again, why is he arriving an hour into the show?
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you talking about Charlotte's dad? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, crazy thing. I didn't know he was a wrestler.
Really?
No.
You thought she was just the random product of some guy's semen?
Well, I mean, aren't we all in a way?
I suppose.
But, you know, sly teaser here, yes. It is Ric Flair. He's super late. Charlotte Flair will make an appearance on this show.
Oh, really? I don't remember that at all.
Oh,
wait, on this episode or?
No, I'm sorry. Not this episode, but stay tuned. And I'll tell you what, she's not half bad. I'm a Charlotte fan. I like Charlotte.
I got no problem with Charlotte.
I like women's wrestling in general, just a side note, because to me, it's like a brand new thing. Like, yes, we've all seen these things. You know, I made a joke about Bischoff turning pivot and hitting him with the chair. We've all seen that 1,000 times. We've seen everything 1,000 times. But for some reason, well, not for some reason, it's because, you know, when the women do it, it's a new thing to experience. And I just, I'm very grateful for it. You know, the Becky Lynch merchandise, aside from the Jinder Mahal t-shirt I bought, the Modern Day Maharaja, is the only modern product merch I've ever purchased. You know, I really bought into the, like, Becky Lynch was the one chance they had to put lightning in a bottle in terms of, like, you know, not having to bring in like Ronda or Brock. And she still is, do not get me wrong. I think it's awesome that she, you know, took her sabbatical and what have you. But she was all the modern product had for me and has nothing to do with the fact that she's insanely hot too. I want to make that very clear. Sure. And yeah, I say that jokingly, but no, it has nothing to do with that. She was a badass and she was an interesting character.
Yeah. I think she was kind of a victim of timing.
Yeah, I like that Charlotte got in on that main event at Mania, because Charlotte, like, I love the fact that, like, we all love Rick Flair, like, as a performer, like, yeah, we all, and the fact that he has this legacy, and not only is it not who he probably ever thought it would be, but she's creating a whole new branch of what he quote unquote perfected or was like the best at. It's so poetic. Like, I'm not trying to be cheesy here. I think it's beautiful that she's like the cornerstone of an evolution of the business that he, you know, sired. I don't know. I might be rambling here, but
no, I get what you're saying. I like it.
I think it's kind of cool.
It's a different legacy performer that we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
We got Dustin Rhodes. We got Randy Orton. Like, we've never had a great wrestler have a female offspring who is also great.
I guess we're not counting Natty, which is fine.
But she's not great. Like,
She's not bad.
No, I think in the context of the timing, we should get back to Nitro. But in the context of her timing of when she came in, she was great compared to the people she was around. But I think we can agree that, like, Becky, Charlotte, Bayley, Sasha, not to go in on their terminology, but it is an evolution.
It is. But Ric Flair's here, folks.
Yeah. But before we get Ric Flair again, Hogan's throwing furniture backstage and everything is beeped out. And he's just breaking the road cases that they carry the gear in. And I feel that's the biggest asshole move he's done on the show, because that's just creating more work for the crew.
Yeah, I mean, that's his secret. He's always angry. That's how he's able to consistently get in this Hulk rage mode. Just to circle back, they showed the replay of Hogan getting hit with the chair about 4 or 5 times. The replays expose the business, because you can just watch Hogan Blade.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's bad.
Cut away, for Christ's sake. So Flair is watching the monitors. I guess he's watching a replay. I don't know what he's watching, but I guess the point of that is that they're getting him up to speed on the show.
This is fucking amazing, because he's watching the opening. This is amazing on like 16 different levels. He's watching the opening segment where Bischoff is running down the guys in the aisleway. Now, Bischoff isn't even his assigned villain. Russo is. Number one, the segment doesn't even they don't have enough time. They queued up the wrong part of the tape. They never even get to Russo talking literally shit about him. Number two, next to him is Terry Taylor, who's watching a monitor of the live Nitro feed of himself watching a monitor of the live Nitro feed of himself watching him. It's like Spaceballs level shit.
Insane.
Yeah. There's like 17 like multiverse versions of Ric Flair and the Red Rooster on our screen, and I just want to know all their stories. Disney Plus, get on it.
Cut into the timelines. So Flair comes to the ring. Obviously, he gets his full music. He and Hogan, the two biggest pieces of shit, get their full entrances. And Flair's in the ring, smiling, despite everything that's happened on the show. He's like, he has a green light. Why? Then he rambles until he says John Elway and the crowd cheers. And then he throws in some kind words for Kevin Green. I didn't even know how to recap this. Then he's yelling about baseball and basketball.
And I can tell you what. Ric Flair doesn't say John Elway. He says Elway. Yeah. Elway. It's classic.
Then he goes, this is the only business in the world where you get your ass kicked out for getting old. What a crazy disconnect that he doesn't think that's what happens in every single business.
Yeah, I mean, you get your gold watch, you usually get shot a couple days before retirement, but, you know, that's what happens when you get old, Rick. And I'm not saying that Rick's old, but come on, man, logic. Yeah. Well, yeah, he's older. This is not the one business. When Joe Montana got old and couldn't perform at the level, he retired. It's not like the NFL cops, oh God, that's a scary phrase. It's like the NFL came and said, hey, Elway, you're too old to compete. Like, he retired. But yeah, I guess the gist is that Russo is trying to kick him out of the business because he's old. But Russo didn't really say that.
No, he just called him a piece of shit.
Yeah. Like, you've been around and you've taken spotlight, I guess. Again, this is all meta knowledge because I know that's where the plot goes. So, I don't know. Russo called me a piece of shit. He did. Ric Flair does say in the clip show, they ask wrestlers if they're excited for the new in a direction, and like Flair in a bumper is like, I can't sum it up in 10 seconds. Give me 10 minutes. I'll tell you all about it. And then they like cut to commercial. So he makes a reference to that. That's what I've got. The green light is I've got the green light. I've got 10 minutes. And I'm not just, you know, so Flair, he cuts a somewhat cohesive promo is why I wanted to bring it back. That aside from randomly yelling John Elway, which is fucking hilarious.
Right. He's dropping lawyer names, and then out comes Big Papa Pump, but he comes out to Steinerline, which is freaking weird. Scott Steiner is the scariest wrestler I've ever seen.
Yeah, he is. When I was a teenager, my friends and I used to call him Big Papa Penis. Big I just wanted to put that mouth. Out. I wanted to put that out in the cultural zeitgeist.
Great. He goes, if you look up the WWF right now, whoever was their third champion, they've all come from up here. I didn't understand any of it, but that was his verbatim diatribe.
Yeah, I think he's trying to say, yes, we should not. I'm not making excuses for Steiner, but this is the Steiner program that you tune in for. This is the Steiner promo that you're tuning in for, folks.
Yeah.
Like, seek it out. It's good. He makes fun of Flair's teeth, but I do think he's making a reference to the fact that, like, Austin, Foley, somebody else, have WWF champions have all got kicked out of WCW by Flair. I think there's some sort of famous internet rumor that like Flair didn't want Austin to get a push or something. I don't know. Allegedly.
Yeah. Some bullshit. He puts in fake teeth, then makes him easier to understand, which I thought was strange. Then out of nowhere, Shane Douglas sneaks up from behind and beats up Flair. We get the, he doesn't work here anymore. And after one punch, Flair lies down like he's dead and he's in a coffin.
Dude, this is the death of Superman. Flair is out for the count, all right? It's crazy. Like, watch it. I don't even know. And then they show a replay, and you do see Douglas, like, drop an elbow. And he didn't even, like, pump his arms back and forth. This is...
He's just dead.
Devastating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's crazy.
So then...
He doesn't work here.
No, he doesn't work here. The announcers scream, what's next? And we're out. And Big Sexy is arriving in the building.
Oh, large attractive.
Yeah. Big Sexy is the stupidest name I've ever heard.
It did allow Conan to yell capital B-I-2-G-S-E-triple-X-Y.
That's true.
A 15-year-old me really got into that.
Also, Bret Hart is in the crowd. For some foreshadowing.
Aaron, he doesn't know where he is.
No, he's nowhere.
And I'm not trying to speak ill of his mental capacity. The Bret Clark character has no idea where he is. Like, this is the worst, like, most awful, like, camera shot. It's just, and yes, I called him Bret Clark on purpose. Everybody, don't tweet me.
Fucking Johnny Buffer over here.
Yeah. Tony Schiavone says, folks, it's a train wreck every segment.
He says, he says it's literally a chain wreck every segment.
It reminds me of, I used to read a lot of Scott Keith, who I know JT's interviewed before. He used to always say this great, had this great line and said, I love shoot comments that aren't supposed to be shoot comments. And this is that to a T.
It's the very definition of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, how can Douglas we do cut to Shane Douglas being interviewed by Mean Gene, and he does nothing but talk shit about Ric Flair. Aaron, do you think it's valid for him to criticize Ric Flair while wearing that shirt?
No, no. He shouldn't be saying anything while wearing that shirt.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't the crazy one.
Where did he buy that? Where did he even buy that
Well,
shirt?
He bought it at Dwayne's garage sale. All right. He probably bought it for $6. It's just $6.
Douglas goes, you've been franchised, Nature Boy. And Gene goes, I'm not going to dignify anything Shane Douglas is saying, all the while keeping the microphone in front of Shane Douglas's mouth.
I can't add anything better to that. It's so true.
Then Sting comes out to, like, his great music they dumped for some reason in the WWE.
Is this match 2, by the way?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I wrote, it's like segment 10 or some shit. I don't know. But yeah, this is the second match of the night, and there's no Metallica on Peacock.
No. No, this isn't Metallica. It's just his da na 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 na.
He was coming out to Search and Destroy at this point.
Shit, so I have an
or edit. Seek and Destroy.
Well, they play it later. They play it later.
Yeah. They do on accident. Well, it they don't edit it because it's only like a. It's like they probably assumed that based on the normal formatics. To coin a phrase of wrestling shows, they don't play the music at this part, so there's nothing to dub over.
Oh my goodness! All right, so Sid comes out, and obviously I'm happy. His music is just the Sid Justice music slowed down.
His Peacock dub, like I want it on an album. It's brilliant. This match is really a highlight of the show for me for multiple reasons, but I would want to hear your play-by-play take on it to see if you caught the same things that I did.
Okay, well, look, what I got is, number one, Sid looks great. he just doesn't age in this period, which I love. And then Tony launches into a diatribe about how Sid had to win and rewin the belt, and it just gives me a headache. I'm like, this is already so convoluted. Sting starts killing him. Sid low blows him right in front of the ref. And then Tony has the balls to call it a gut shot. Then Sid starts hearing the chants and starts losing it. Crowd is like really behind Sting. And then like Sid just gets in his face and yells, "Wrong place, wrong time, shut up!" Which popped me. Sid gets a Cobra Clutch into a Cobra Clutch slam. Nick Patrick's doing his lazy counting. Then
so lazy.
I know, he's like on his side. Then Hudson goes, Russo literally left Sid, Sting, DDP, and Lex out to dry. The use of the word literally is really bothering me. Double clothesline. And then they go, television can't do this justice. Then the wall comes out with a table.
Brother, I think you got a weird edit. I saw Malice.
Oh, that's right. Was it Malice? I saw Berlin.
No. Yeah.
The ref is now down. I don't see why. Then Sid powerbombs Sting. Then the wall beats him up. Then he chokeslams. Hold on. Chokeslam. The wall champs chokeslams Sid through a table, but it's like half a foot off the ground. Then Doug Dillinger comes out in a sweater to get the wall out, which I guess is the feud you were talking about. No, that's a different thing.
It was Tank, but still, Dillinger's there. Again, yeah. Why didn't they just use him with Tank?
So then Patrick counts Sid out. So like,
yeah, it's a count out.
What?
A couple of things here. Just to go back, to circle back. This match is interesting to throw some knowledge in. This is Sid's last appearance for a long time as an in-ring performer. Okay. It's weird in the match. He kind of does some greatest hits of people he's been associated with in his career. At one point, Sting kicks him in the corner and he does the amazing, like Shawn Michaels riding the pony in the corner, like getting kicked gimmick. So there's a little Shawn Michaels call out. And then I know he puts him in the Cobra Clutch, but in my head, he's got him in the Million Dollar Dream.
Oh. That's right.
Which he picked up from those years, you know, running the rails with Ted DiBiase.
The corporation.
Exactly. This is it for Sid, which is weird because again, they're setting up another pairing, Sid versus the Wall. Like this is going to be another like feud of young versus old. It's mirror images of one another. But yeah, he does not. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm breaking your heart.
Sid's the man. Don't talk about that. That's 5 stars. All right. 5 stars. It's Sid. All right.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. I gave it 2.5 because it made me laugh.
I was legit at 2. I'm just curious. Are we going to get a match on this show that doesn't involve all the guys that were ostracized at the start of the show?
Well, again, it goes back to the I need you. But I'm not gonna make your but I'm gonna make your life miserable, which yes is just McMahon and Austin. But nah, we're not.
But the whole thing is like there's no opportunities for the younger guys because all the old guys are in the top spots, and then you just continue to book all the guys in the top spots.
Right. Why isn't the tournament Vampiro, Booker, Prince Iaukea and – but yeah, Buff. There you go. Prince Iaukea, whatever. I don't know why I thought of him. Probably because
– need someone to take a job.
Yeah. So – but yeah, right there. I mean, it makes more narrative sense.
Yeah. Like, okay, you guys aren't getting a shot. You've already had all your shots.
Right.
It's just one line. Also, how big is this backstage area? Because Hogan can't find Bischoff, Flair can't find Douglas, and it's been like an hour of searching.
Yeah, and can we like slap some sort of litigation on Ric Flair for inappropriately busting out Diamonds Are Forever, and so is Ric Flair for a feud of this caliber?
I know, against Douglas, who's in the ring again. And then Hogan's backstage throwing fucking packing peanuts everywhere. Then he throws
And that's three count. He throws three count. And he's got blood all over his shirt. He hasn't cleaned himself. He's a walking biohazard. Kind of channels Rip from No Holds Barred when he says, "Have you seen Bischoff?"
Yeah.
I thought that they were gonna. I thought three count was gonna say,
"What's that like, smell?"
Like he's so Rip here, like Rip Rogers. If anybody's watching. So yeah, it happens.
Rip is who he thinks he is.
Rip is. No Holds Barred, just as like the fact that it exists. I mean, we talk about Russo and Bischoff in their creative roles, not establishing the rules of the narrative. What the fuck are the rules of the No Holds Barred universe? Like, is wrestling real? Is Kurt Fuller really dead? Like, I don't know.
Did he send men to rape that woman because she fell in love with Rip?
Yeah. And did those pies really subdue those terrorists that were going to rob that diner?
Why isn't Zeus jailed for breaking Randy's back?
Yeah.
He wasn't in the match.
Was Randy paralyzed? How do you interpret that? Do you think he's going to walk again?
I guess not.
I always kind of thought it was permanent, which was sad. I mean, obviously. But
this guy's fighting with giant wrenches.
Yeah. And how come Rip should be in at least, you know, lose his house for that structure damage to Zeus's private gym
as yeah well. Yeah, he smashed up that gym for no reason, but he also smashed up the ring with Zeus's body.
Well, two wrongs don't make it right, guys, come on.
That's true. So then out of all this chaos, like there's all this chaos and fighting, and they're like, this past Wednesday we're at the Mann Theater for the premiere of Ready to Rumble
with Mrs. Brock Lesnar.
Yeah,
I could not believe that they I mean, obviously, like, you're at a Hollywood premiere, you can get away with showing, I guess, Rina Mero on camera, but
right.
She's there.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought they were upset with that, but whatever. Then Jarrett's out in the Slapnut shirt. Hudson brags that Ready to Rumble made $5.5 million.
Did you see Ready to Rumble on opening weekend? Were you part of that 5.5? Because I was.
I was not. I was touring the United States, I believe, at this point. I saw it in a hotel with a bunch of actors, and we laughed at it.
Yeah, I love Jimmy King. I'm not going to waste anybody's time talking about Ready to Rumble, but I love Jimmy King. It cracked. Oliver Platt is really – he's at least caring. He's trying.
Oh, he's trying. Yeah, no doubt. Henning comes out to fight Jarrett. He's not looking great. They brawl in the aisle to start. I just think the color on the back of Henning's singlet is too close to his skin color. It just – it feels like it's growing out of him. And then we get some news. Hulk Hogan has been informed that Bischoff is in a skybox.
Wow.
And also Hudson – then Hudson follows up by saying, Hulk Hogan is on a scavenger hunt. I don't think he knows what
that
is.
Which is something else I also want to see, by the way. Brother, did you find the blue egg? I couldn't find it.
Hulk Hogan has been looking for the pink teddy bear all day, but dude.
Yeah, I need a sign, brother, that has a person's name.
He's probably saying this to like poor baristas in like every second cup or every Starbucks on the corner.
I can't wait till he gets to this to the skybox, because I've got six pages on that alone. But continue, please.
So is Hudson the heel announcer because he's pulling for Jarrett the whole match?
Well, I think that he's supposed to represent, and I think he's supposed to represent like the internet fan. Like, we don't want Jarrett to win per se, but we want someone else to be on top.
Other than it's Mr. weird. Perfect? Mr. Perfect's never been champion anywhere.
I think we can both agree that this is not Mr. Perfect.
That's true. What we do get, though, is some bastardized Mr. Perfect music, and here comes Sean Stasiak. And Hudson screams, he was meat!
Oh, there's so much insider shit here. He was meat. We know what happened to him in New York. And they even say that sounds like Kurt Hennig's old music. No, Kurt Hennig's old music was rap as crap, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. In the narrative.
Yeah, Kurt Hennig never had that music.
Right.
So he comes out, he distracts Hennig, the ref gets bumped. Stasiak comes in, nearly kills him with something. Tony doesn't even know what to call it. He goes, he drove him down.
Stasiak, I mean, I know he only made it to 03, but he almost bit it in 2000 here. But he can't hold him.
No.
It's unsafe. It's unsafe.
Yeah. And then Hennig rolls around instead of getting pinned. And then Jarrett yes. picks him up and gives him the stroke. I had the
same note. Hennig at least was smart enough to save his own credibility. That I'm sure that was supposed to be the finish, but he makes Jarrett give him the stroke.
Yeah. Why does every match need to end in the exact same way on this show?
Well, I mean, there's a bit of a formula here, my friend, if you haven't caught on yet.
Heel interference.
Yes. Well, the rules haven't been relaxed yet, so I love how they find creative ways to distract the refs.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's just one guy coming out.
Yeah.
I'm at like one star for the match. What do you want me to say?
I actually gave it a dud.
Oh.
Well, and it was mainly because Scott Hudson said meat.
Oh, that he used to be meat.
I mean, I like a good insider reference, a 16-year-old me does, but I mean, nobody gave a fuck about meat. I'm sorry.
No. I'm surprised they didn't drop a PMS reference. Hogan is still searching. Nash is talking to someone who will be there. Sting yells about Showtime. It's just all these quick clips. Tony's like, who is Nash talking to? Could it be Scott Hall?
Flair. Yeah. Sting is – someone has to tell Sting you literally can't ever end every sentence with it's Showtime, folks. Like – you know, my mother-in-law has cancer. It's showtime, folks. It doesn't work.
No. No. And it's not a good catchphrase anyway.
Right.
Flair comes out. Again, full entrance. Biggest piece of shit on earth. I guess they just dropped that after the first match.
Yeah, it doesn't come back. Real quick, we missed. Hogan does get to the skybox real quick.
Oh, Christ.
He threatens – there's like a family in there, or at least people – like a gathering of 10 or 12 people who are probably there for a similar purpose. He threatens a dude sitting down that looks just like Eminem because it's the year 2000. Then he yells at like another guy. There is a kid that comes up to Hogan's elbow just, you know, because he's a kid. Hogan, in character, angrily turns around – fucking elbows this kid right in the face, yells "God damn it" on camera, and leaves the skybox. This kid's childhood has been ruined.
I just wanted Hogan's autograph, so he elbowed me in the face.
Yeah, I mean, well, Hulk Hogan elbowed him in the face. I don't want to say Terry Bollea did because that's lawsuit potential. But this poor kid, I rewound it like six times though because I was laughing my ass off.
I think this was cut from what I have. Because I don't remember this at all. And I know I there's no way I could have missed it.
I mean, it's not – I mean, hey, this kid didn't get like a bloody nose or something. It's like when you bump into somebody at the airport. But Hogan's in character. He does not know this kid's behind him. It's pretty funny.
Ridiculous. It was Hulk Hogan's elbow, dude. Right. So Douglas is out in his stupid fucking shirt. Flair takes his Rolex and puts it on the floor. Why did he even bring it to the ring?
Foreshadowing, bro.
Yeah. Did either of these guys just not have their gear? They're both wrestling in slacks.
And one of them doesn't even work here.
That's right. And I can't believe Douglas has another shirt under that first shirt.
I had the same fucking note. You know, when I was a kid, I thought that like wearing a shirt under the shirt would make me look skinnier. Spoiler alert, it doesn't.
Nope.
But he did not want to take those chops. I'm telling you, like,
yeah.
I don't think it's not some like great plan, but I bet it was a rib. I'm not ribbing you that it was a rib, that he didn't want to take those Flair chops.
For sure. And Flair,
allegedly.
Flair finally takes his shirt, his other shirt off, finally rips it off. I feel like I'm watching an evening gown match or like a special business casual match. The announcers are still trying to sell us on the fact that Douglas doesn't work there. And why is he still the franchise? He's not the franchise of WCW.
Yeah. Hudson lets us know that they're feuding because the franchise buried Flair in the dirt sheets online and in the legit news media. What legit news media outfits do you think have interviewed the franchise?
I think Larry King did. Didn't they have that sit down where he asked him all about his problems with Ric Flair?
Well, yeah, I think there was that hard hitting expose.
Wasn't he on Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher where he kind of went into that tirade about?
We probably shouldn't talk about that one specifically, but you're right. You've proven me wrong.
Yeah.
The legit news media did interview Shane Douglas.
You got to be more informed. You have to be more informed about this stuff.
Scott Hudson's commentary.
Yeah, he's the worst. Here comes Vince Russo with a bat. Russo hits Ric Flair with a baseball bat, and the ref calls for the DQ. But there was like a ton of low blows in the match. I don't know why that in particular was a DQ.
At one point, the ref literally tries to get out of place to miss the low blow because he knows it's coming and looks right at it. It was fantastic. I got a little bored during this match, so I thought I would check out some of the signs in the arena.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, two gentlemen in the front row were the Beta Theta Pi tag team champions. It wasn't very, it wasn't that big of a deal. There's a sign that's on camera all night. It's a two-part sign. It says, "I'm on TV and you're not," with "you're" spelled Y-O-U-R.
Yes. No, thank you.
And there's also some slander. There's a slanderous sign about some man in Colorado named Ric Flair with a K.
Oh.
Apparently, he wears Depends. He must be some local man.
Is there anything about Kroenke, the owner of the Denver Nuggets?
Just that he's a bastard, pal.
He's a bastard, pal. What was his first name that Vince made fun of?
Is it Stan Kroenke, or is that from a TV show?
I feel like he has like a one-letter initial before Stan, like E. Stan Kroenke or something like that.
W. Stan Kroenke, I'm coming for you, pal.
How dare you?
I don't know.
Your team win in the playoffs.
Success? Oh, I'm going to make you wrestle Rosie O'Donnell.
No, thank you. So they beat the shit out of Rick. Did you catch the Darth Maul cutout?
I did. This is also where Tony casually throws in that we're calling the old guys the Millionaires Club.
Right.
First reference of the Millionaires Club.
This Millionaires Club. As though it's something that's been established. They beat him down with a baseball bat. Douglas and Russo beat Flair down with a baseball bat, which should kill him. Then Russo crotch chops a bunch of times, and then Russo steals his watch. Russo then leaves as though he's accomplished something. Is this what TNA would look like if they had actually star power?
Oh, absolutely. I think this is what TNA looks like anyway. Because I don't necessarily believe that year 2000 Shane Douglas is a star. It's a hot take for you.
Right, but Ric Flair is a star.
Yeah, okay, you're right. This is also the origin of the Batman. Vince Russo will refer to himself as the Batman many times.
Right.
And this is why. Also, I will give Russo a little bit of credit because – you know, the franchise and Flair is another one of these mirror image rivalries they've been setting up. He at least has the good sense to give Douglas the bat to get most of the shots in so Douglas can get, in quotation marks, over. Because, you know, ultimately, the wrestlers are going to make me want to buy the show, right?
Yeah.
So I gave it 3 stars, mainly for the signs.
Great. There were some 3-star signs there.
Yes.
You know, if you want to get Douglas over, I don't know, maybe you have him win the wrestling match?
Well, this is more of a street fight. I mean, it can't be a licensed bout. He doesn't even work here.
That's true. He's not an employee.
No.
Moving right along, Wolfpack. I feel like the show start like not ours, but I think the WCW show, it's just so much happening, right? Like, it's like TNA.
Yeah, I've got segment 13 written, but I mean, I'm not a producer, pal. I don't know if it's really segment 13, but that's a fucking lot.
It might be segment 30. Wolfpack song. Here's Nash hobbling out on crutches.
And, yeah, the super shredder is damaged goods. Yeah,
and it's strange to hear. Here's the problem with Big Sexy. It's strange to hear other grown men calling him Big Sexy.
Well, I don't know. I'm a bit of a more modern man. I'm okay with that.
No, but it's more like, you know, this is Big Sexy. Like, it just doesn't – it's not that it's a problem calling him a sexy man. It's just the phrasing of it. It just feels strange.
I get what you said, especially for a wrestling program. Like, it's not exactly like the NWO girls christened him Big Sexy. He kind of just christened himself, right? I mean, I'm not entirely in on the origins of the term.
Well, he started calling himself Big Sexy the Giant Killer.
That's right. Big Sexy the Giant – which is – kind of a children's story that, I don't know, I'd read to my kids.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, 2021.
That's right.
So he gets the cheap pop for screaming the name of a town. And then he starts talking about the Jagoffs, which he keeps leaning hard into that G sound. Jag.
I have a note. My note says literally, he's so cool, he says Jagoff instead of Jackoff.
I figure that's just what he's allowed to say.
Well, you're probably right.
Nash is like, what happened to that sweet little wrestling show? And all I could think about was, no kidding.
It's the line of the night.
Yeah.
His delivery is, what happened to that sweet little wrestling show? Like, this is Kevin Nash to a T.
Yeah. So, talking about Scott Hall, he's straight sober and in a real bad mood. Neither Vince nor Eric would be here if it wasn't for Scott and him, which is maybe true. Then he starts talking about how he saved Russo from being decapitated by Shawn Michaels.
Scott Hudson also says click at one point, I believe.
Yeah. Was that before or after saying, they're shooting here?
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine if Superman was talking to Batman and said, hey, we should probably get that Thor guy in our movie? I mean, they're referencing the other company's internet rumors, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. That no one heard or cared about. And then,
yeah, it's true.
He goes, if you're going to, talking of Russo and Bischoff, if you're going to come down here, bring your bat, your chair, and your balls. But before they can come down, ECW champion Mike Awesome comes in and beats up Nash with a crutch.
How the fuck does he get in? He doesn't even work here.
He doesn't work here. He's got a white vest and a giant fanny pack. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen such a giant fanny pack. And this is, like, it's a pretty good beatdown and a pretty good debut. Like, it's a good position for Mike Awesome.
Absolutely. This is a great, like, in my opinion, like, they never actually, well, I don't know. I won't get into it. It's another great, like, mirror match setup, you know, DC Marvel, like, you're my guy. Awesome looks like $1 million. He does for the first couple months of his WCW run. I have not an ill word to say about this version of Mike Awesome.
It's just crazy that he goes from this to Fat Chick Thriller.
It is, and it's such a waste, too. There are so many guys who are over already that don't get – they just – we'll get to it. But Awesome looks great. Yeah. He looks awesome. What do you want me to say?
And Tony's like, what else can happen? Apparently more.
We can get Hulk Hogan. I don't want to steal your thunder. Hulk Hogan is on the phone, I think, with his attorney or Bubba the Love Sponge, talking about eating ass. Someone needed to tell this Hulk Hogan person that eating ass, he will go in the weeks ahead. Someone get an eating ass count. He says it so much.
Yeah, he doesn't know what it means.
No, he doesn't.
He's screaming at his lawyers on the phone, and then he slams the limo door closed, and then a white Hummer crashes into the limo, and then Tony and Hudson yell, "It's the white Hummer," as though it's a returning character to the show.
I made a note here that the Hummer from last summer could either be a really good porno or a really good slasher flick, by the way.
But you know what it's not? It's a good wrestling angle.
No, it's I think it is a callback to, like, but fuck, I'm at a loss for words here. I don't even know.
You can't treat it like it's a character.
Right.
He's back.
That's the cardinal sin.
That white Hummer doesn't work here. They're like one step away from saying that. And Scott Hudson goes, who is driving the Hummer? I never thought I'd say that again.
Yeah, as if, number one, he was on commentary, but two, we're supposed to get that it's like this multi-layered reference to a canceled storyline or a storyline that didn't get resolved. I mean, I don't know. Do we know who rose the briefcase at the King of the Ring? It's an ill-advised callback. You could, if you want to do callbacks to your show's history, like, I don't know, do something NWO. I mean, I'm not advising that, but like, just
don't do this.
Yeah, don't do this.
Bischoff and Kidman are driving it, and they cut away, and then Hogan, they cut back, and Hogan's being loaded into an ambulance, and Kidman and Bischoff are basically dancing on his grave as he's being loaded in, which I thought was really ballsy when you're being recorded murdering someone on television.
Yeah, they showed the replay 6 times, by the way, in slow motion.
And then Tony... it's crazy. They keep showing it. And Tony goes, Hogan's going to the hospital. And I'll be honest, the word hospital I found jarring because I've never heard it on a wrestling show before.
My heart palpitated, and I thought for sure Hudson was going to say a medical facility.
Pow. But no time to spend on this because DDP is out for the final of the tournament. Now, of course, with his full entrance, his music is pyro. The announcers don't even address it.
They do let us know that they've been cleared on TNT until 10:30, so hold on to your seats.
Did you take that as a threat? Because I took that as a threat.
It was something. I don't know. At this point in time, I was ready to join Hogan on the eating ass train because I was done watching this show.
See, and then this is where Sting comes out to the Megadeth.
Yes.
But why? Like, so I don't understand. Was it edited? Was it edited on Peacock, the Megadeth here?
So you can usually always get the dun 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 dun. If anybody you know knows what the hell those tones are, but again, that's just poor editing. It's like because the Sting Crow song is so low in tone that it doesn't really cover it. Yeah. I don't know.
It's like, you know what the worst version of that ever was? The Lex Luger British Bulldog mix. Like, they just couldn't get the EQ on that. It's like.
Dun, I don't know. We might come to blows on that. I kind of love that song.
I love it, but fix the volume.
Yeah,
because it goes.
You're right. It goes from Jim Johnson was out on a smoke break on that one.
Da 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 da. It's so jarring.
Side note. How about a Kurt Angle Yokozuna tag team with their songs remixed together? Even though I know that Yokozuna's song is not I'm not inferring it's the Japanese national anthem, but
you think Kurt Angle's song is the American national anthem?
Isn't it? I mean, it should be, right?
You know what the biggest tragedy in all of national anthems is? That the country of Panama isn't using the Van Halen song as the national anthem. Because I want to see that at the Olympics when the flag is being raised.
Oh, God. Maybe that's why. I mean, literally in my head, I may have reconciled Kurt Angle's song being the actual. But, yeah, it's because he won a medal. Oh, man, it's late.
Yeah,
but
I know.
I love it.
But we're almost done. Because, look, it's going to be Sting and DDP. Jarrett's out for some reason. I'd like to have one match that doesn't have someone come out and interfere. But
yeah, and why are they putting him on commentary? I really hope he never has a vehicle where he's speaking into a microphone for a living.
He'll get better. Everyone's calling Sting a movie star. And Jarrett's like, I'm going to put the stroke on everybody. And I don't know. That doesn't seem like that bad a threat.
No, I'm down. It's late. I'm, you know, lonely.
Yeah, I can go for a little stroke. I love DDP in the match. Fights not to get put into the Scorpion Deathlock. I thought that was a nice little touch. I thought this match, I don't think I need to go too much into it, but I just thought it was a good match. I thought it was fine until the interference.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not bad. It's kind of like, it kind of feel like a house show match, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, eventually, there is some interference.
Yeah, by our friend Vampiro that we mentioned earlier. And then DDP walks in and hits Sting with the Diamond Cutter. So it's going to be DDP against Double J at the pay-per-view. And then Jarrett goes to hit DDP with the guitar, but he hits Kimberly instead.
And yeah. Kimberly reacts seconds before Jarrett even swings the guitar. Watch it on the replay. All the goodwill for Vampiro, if you want to call it that, is thrown down the drain. that they built up with Hogan. I'm not saying it was a good idea, but it's completely out of quote unquote character. Again, they both have face paint, so they must be each other's villain in this mirror match shit.
Tony, maybe the line of the night. We have to go to a commercial break, and Kimberly needs medical attention. Thanks, Tony.
I gave it one star until I noticed that Kimberly flinched before he swung the guitar, and I bumped it up to 3.
I'll go 2.5. It seemed fine. So we go backstage now. I don't know why we're going backstage before we're going to the show. But Double J is high-fiving Russo and Eric. Then Double J comes back out. And then Tony says a lynch mob is waiting for him, which I thought was an extreme reference to what was happening.
Holy shit, I missed that. Yeah. And I'm glad I did.
And I'm like, we've heard Double J's music 3 times tonight. It's enough. Like, Jarrett's on the mic. It's just a TNA show at this point. He's yelling about Destiny like he's Alberto Del Rio. He says he's going to bang Kimberly and offers to show her more wood. Then DDP comes out, obviously to his music. I don't know why he has his music. Then Scott Steiner comes out.
Yeah.
Now everybody's coming out. So now Scott Steiner comes out to help help Double J. Luger saves DDP, can barely run. Buff comes out to help the New Blood. Vampiro, The Wall, Sting. Everybody's just running out.
This is when Booker and the Cat run out together, by the way.
That's right. That's exactly. It's just a mess. The crowd chants for Goldberg. How is Buff Bagwell in the New Blood? He's been in WCW since like 1991.
He's been Rookie of the Year since 91, if I'm not mistaken.
So it's a big...
It's a Pier 22 brawl. Yeah. Russo and Bischoff come out on the ramp and celebrate.
Shake hands.
Oh, wait, who's that? It's Bret Hart?
Bret Clark. Bret stands there, looks at them for 2 seconds, and we're off the air.
Yeah. You're looking at them like it's Mr. Burns' mansion.
Yeah,
look...
I didn't hate this. I didn't hate the whole show.
No. I fucking love it.
I thought I was going to hate it. It moved fast. And like, I like everybody on it. I don't like what anybody's doing, but I like everybody on it.
Like, this WCW is built for like the modern meme era, which is not something that I necessarily want to get behind. But like, there are so many great moments in the coming months and what have you that really outweigh the garbage storytelling. It's a lot of fun. I say all these insults, I say in jest. I fucking love this show.
If you had to give this show a score out of 10, what would you score it?
A 7. And here's why. I feel like at a 7, it's a recommendation. You're actively telling someone that something they should view for better or worse.
Yes. Yeah, I'd probably go 6.
Because...
Go on.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't want to it's a bad wrestling show in terms of everything we've just picked apart, but you should watch it. You should see this. It's important.
It's important. I'd probably go like a solid 6. I mean, I didn't hate it. It was fine. Now, I think normally when we look at these, we should do a bunch of awards and stuff, but we've been going a bit long. So before we do that, though. Okay, let me shout out Viewer's Choice, which drops after every major show. Marcus and Tim killing it every single time. Please give them a listen. They're totally worth your time. No Holds Barred Saturdays, JT's Mailbag on Saturdays, and from Squared Circle to Silver Screen, Cowboy and Logan breaking down movies with wrestlers. And finally, Sunday, Second Print Comics, Mark Claire and Remzo Martinez. Give that a listen. It's a great in-depth comic show. Is this an exciting jumping off point for the promotion for you, Johnny?
It is, because I like the mirror match concept. I know, I beat the point into the ground. It makes sense to do. There are better ideas out there, but, for something that's thrown together, I'll give it a shot. I'm definitely not watching it live, though. I'm still watching Raw live.
Yeah. So let's just, before we go, let's break down these mirror matches, because I think there's something.
Okay.
Let's talk about ones we might be excited with versus ones where we think are garbage. Because I think there's some that are good, some that are bad. So Sting and Vampiro, what are we thinking there?
I mean, it makes sense. It's, again, this is maybe a bad reference. It's your like Scorpion, Sub-Zero. They both have paint. I get it, but it makes sense. I mean, might as well. If done right and actually has a plot attached to it, I think it makes sense. And they've been trying to attach the Rocket to Vampiro, so you might as well have him take out Sting.
Okay. Goldberg and Tank Abbott.
Pass?
No,
nah.
Thank you.
I mean, yeah, no fucking thank you.
I'm good. I don't need to see that. This is one I think is not a mirror image one, but I think is actually interesting, is Flair and Shane Douglas.
Yeah, and to a lesser extent, you've got Flair Russo, like North versus South. Hey,
yeah.
But yeah, yes, I am, because 16-year-old me knows about the shoot interviews that Douglas cuts on Flair. So can they work together? Not in a Russo-Bischoff way, but can they get along without punching each other in the face?
What about Nash and Mike Awesome?
I'm in.
I'm in too. Luger Bagwell.
Well, I guess Liz will be at ringside. I've always had a soft spot for Liz.
this one makes sense, I guess.
It does. You can't argue with the logic, but oof.
I don't want to see Sid and Wall.
Well, don't worry. You won't.
Good. Okay. And I don't know how you feel, too. I don't want to see Perfect and Stasiak.
You will. No, it's awful. I don't ever want to see Stasiak.
Okay, and that leaves us one. Well, there's some guys left out. Like, what's Steiner? Who's Steiner paired off with? And who is Booker T paired off with?
Well, that's the thing. They don't really have a storyline yet. And, you know, we all know that Russo is obviously a big Booker T fan. What do you think about Booker T and Hogan?
Well, see, that ties into, I think that would have been a much more credible storyline than Hogan and Billy Kidman.
I completely agree. You can still push Kidman because, the Cruiserweight champion, I think, was the Artist at this point. And, I mean, I know that – I don't think the Cruiserweight's a demotion. I know WWE and F look at it that way. But, you know, give the Cruiserweights a storyline and have Kidman be the main focus of that.
Or if you want – if you want to use Kidman and move him up to the heavyweight division, I think maybe you put him with Flair.
Ooh, because I like that. I had not thought of that.
It's the same idea, right? Only
yep.
I think it's – and I think Kidman is kind of a – this is going to sound weird, but he's more of a spiritual successor to Flair than he is to Hogan.
Sure, the girls on the side, the quote-unquote modern attractiveness.
Just the work rate.
The work rate.
Yeah,
they're similar. Like Flair is, you know, 80s robe, Rolex. Kidman's more like 2000s, I don't know, surf model. Like I'm not, you know, personally attracted to Kidman, but that, you know, but he definitely has a like vibe.
Yeah.
You could work at it. You can make it a reality. It's wrestling, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Hulk is much better paired off against Booker T or even Scott Steiner.
Ooh, God, yeah.
Like those feel Hogan, like better choices for Hogan.
Yeah, they do. But like I said, you know, Hogan and Kidman has always been my favorite just because of the, I guess, quote unquote, elevating of Kidman. But yeah, knowing what we know now in hindsight and just at the time, Hogan Booker is a much better. And I kind of want to hear the Hogan and Steiner cut promos on one another.
Oh, it'd be great.
Yeah. It really would.
Well, because you could feel like Steiner could actually back up that promo.
Yeah, and they're literally like mirror images of one another in a sense that they're muscled up dudes. Hogan's clean cut in quotation marks and Steiner's, you know, a sex hound.
Exactly. Exactly.
So,
yeah, look, I think there's some exciting stuff going forward. I don't know. I liked it. Johnny, awesome job, brother.
Oh, thank you, sir. Yeah, it was fun. You did okay, I guess.
Nah, not the best. Not my finest
hour. Air George is a gift to podcasting. Listen
Stop
to
it.
the year that was. It is a masterclass in Joey Styles-esque single man announcing. No, I really do love it. Like, you know, not just to kiss up. It's a great show. It's entertaining as hell, and it's the stuff we want to hear about.
I truly appreciate that, brother. Is there anything you want to plug that's not me?
Let's plug, I can't think of anything funny. Follow me on Twitter, White Mage DD.
White Mage?
That's a White Mage DD, like the cup says. It's a Final Fantasy reference if anybody really cares.
Yeah. All right, I'm at Aaron D. Justice. It was a pleasure, my friend. And there'll be many. It will, for the next little while, we'll be saying the WCW must die.
You're goddamn right, they must.